Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Thank you, Raj. This is Domati Pongo. I'm sitting alongside Jerry Nunn, and we are in for Dave Plyer. It is 2:11. Jerry, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Wide awake and ready to have some fun.
Yeah, I'm way more awake than I thought I would be at 2:11 in the morning after a long day. I was here earlier today, or Saturday morning, I should say, at 6 a.m.
Okay.
And I'm still going.
Wow.
How has your Saturday been, man?
It's been good. I checked out a haunted house. I went to a beer and bacon fest at Soldier Field.
Oh, wow.
So that was like a wild thing. A lot of people. So.
I'm sure.
So, yeah.
That sounds exciting. Nunn on the Run. Well, if you don't know Jerry Nunn, you hear him all the time with Bill and Wendy, giving his entertainment roundup, his website, Nunn on the Run. He's a writer, and he's just a cool guy. He's always in the WGN radio studios. And we're filling in for Dave Plyer. Dave Plyer is off because he is filling in for everybody else.
Okay.
He filled in for Lou Manfredini this morning, and I'm Domati Pongo. I'm in the WGN newsroom and some of everywhere as well. So it's really good to be on with you now.
Yeah, this is going to be fun.
This is going to be fun. Wait, before we dive into everything we've got a really exciting show. We're talking movies. We're talking Bradley Cooper.
Absolutely.
We're talking about Brett Kavanaugh for a moment.
Okay.
And you were at the Beer and Bacon Festival. Tell me about this, though.
It's at Soldier Field. It's an annual event. Big lines of people, but you get to try all kinds of little samples, bacon all around, little samples of beer, and it was wild. It goes all the way around the stadium inside.
So beer is all the craze today. I don't know if you've seen this. There's this hashtag beer for Brett.
Oh, wow.
Going on right now.
Yeah, explain that.
So Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh is now Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. So he's the one who was accused of sexually assaulting Dr. Christine Blasey Ford. You have those hearings. You have the dramatic press conference and speech. Well, not press conference, but a Senate address by Republican Susan Collins. She was one of the swing votes deciding whether or not this nomination was actually going to go through. Really trying times for people who have experienced sexual assault. So there have been protests at the Capitol Hill. There have been protests at the Supreme Court. But on the other end, a lot of conservatives are really happy that Brett Kavanaugh was confirmed and that this nomination went through.
Yes.
And in his hearing, when he talked about and defended himself against those sexual assault allegations, there was this really awkward moment where he talked about how much he likes beer. Because there has been a lot of talk about how intoxicated he may or may not have been the night he allegedly assaulted Ford. And so he says in his speech, I like beer. Wow. I really like beer. Me and PJ and Swee and the guys, we drink beer.
Oh, my gosh.
And so everyone is on social media taking pictures and selfies of themselves drinking beer, saying hashtag beer for Brett, a toast to Brett Kavanaugh, celebrating the fact that he is now a Supreme Court justice. Hmm. So the country is torn. The vote was tight. It was like 50-48.
Okay.
And, you know, I haven't been in the newsroom in, 12 hours. So I can't keep news out of my system. So I had to, as I started looking at these news stories and looking at Twitter, this is what folks are talking about. And you were at Beer and Bacon Fest. So were you having a beer for Brett, Jerry?
I did not drink beer there. I quit drinking over a year ago, so that's been a challenge.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
Congratulations.
Thanks, but I mean, I still went around. I had enough bacon, because you can cram a lot of bacon in without all the beer.
Bacon is a little more addictive, if you ask me.
Yeah,
but definitely. We've got a lot of show to get into. We talked about this a minute ago with Lisa and Carl, and this is what I really want to get into. Mm-hmm. A Star is Born.
Yes.
Bradley Cooper.
Right.
What is this film about?
Okay, so it's the fourth remake of this, and it's actually based on a fifth film. So this is you know, just the brand new version that Bradley worked on and with Lady Gaga and trained her and showed her the ropes, I guess, in acting. This is her first starring role. So Lady Gaga's phenomenal in this movie, and I think they're going to do well at award season.
And so what's happening?
It's basically discovering a new unknown person. You know, she's a waitress, mm-hmm. and you know he tries to make her dreams come true, and she belts out some great music, and it's funny. And he has a lot of addiction problems, so talking about drinking and things like that,
yeah,
all ties together. So he runs out of booze and he stops at a gay bar, which is kind of unusual. And there she is singing, you know, live. And that's how he discovers her at the very beginning.
And he is a rock star. Bradley Cooper's character mm-hmm. is already an established rock star. I started watching some of the trailers. Lady Gaga's character talks about how she's really insecure and self-conscious.
Right.
And how she doesn't like to sing her own music and felt self-conscious because people like her voice, like her songs, mm-hmm. but don't like how she looks.
Mm-hmm.
And
about her nose and everything, right?
And
she's
this
got Italian nose.
Yeah, and it's weird because so much of her character uh-huh. relates to her as a person,
right.
but this script wasn't written with her in mind. Who was originally supposed to play the character Lady Gaga plays, and how did this movie even come about? This is Cooper's first time even in the director's seat.
Right. There was talks that Beyonce was going to do it. It's been kind of floating around for a while to do this remake, because this is Barbara Streisand was the last one before this that did that.
Word.
So Bradley said at the screening, he showed up at the screening, which is pretty amazing. He came to Chicago to promote, and said he hadn't seen the one before it, the Barbara Streisand version. So then he brushed up on it and everything afterwards. So yeah, but it's kind of its own thing. I mean, there's definitely a lot of original things that are not from any of the other movies.
What really struck me when I was looking at this stuff, Jerry, I was going through the film and I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to watch a trailer. I saw Dean Richards on GN gave it an A+, and I said, oh, okay, so this is something to pay attention to. So I'm looking at the trailer, paying attention to all this stuff. And Lady Gaga talks about this moment where she does a screen test.
Okay.
And she's reading the lines with Bradley Cooper, and she comes with a full face of makeup, and he grabs a wipe, wipes the makeup off of her face,
mm-hmm.
and has her do it again.
Right.
And then in the trailer, you see this line, because I haven't seen the film, you have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
There's this line where she talks about how insecure she is about how she looks. And she says that rung true for her in real life.
Oh, yeah.
Because how often are you, especially as a public figure on TV, without your makeup? So, like, what parallels knowing Lady... Well, I don't know if you know Lady Gaga, but knowing,
we're not
knowing
chummy.
But knowing her music and stuff, did it seem like this character was somebody she really, really related to? Because everyone's talking about the chemistry the two of these folks had, and how well they were able to, you know, bring the characters to life on camera. It seemed like it was real.
Yeah. So, well, let me tell you a little story.
Yeah.
I have written for Windy City Times for 15 years, coming up on 15 years. So it's a newspaper, a local newspaper here, LGBT centered. So we did a kind of American Idol inspired contest where we would go around to the bars and people would compete for money and sing. So our finals came around, and this is back when Lady Gaga only had the Let's Dance song. So she came and performed when she was an unknown artist. So she played it. This is Circuit Nightclub on Halsted.
Wow.
And she just came with, you know, a leotard, some glasses, and a little wraparound, you know, scarf.
Mm.
And I think she had two dancers with her. So she did the Let's Dance song. And, you know, people enjoyed it or whatever, but no one knew who she was.
Mm-hmm.
She went and sat on the curb. Nobody wanted an autograph. Nobody paid attention to her. And so that is reflected, actually, in the movie. She sits on the curb, and nobody's paying attention, you know, and she's struggling to be famous and things like that. So I just thought that was really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
They wrote that into the film.
So, well, I don't know if it's... But it is her rise to the top, because, you know, she played Lollapalooza and at a small stage, and nobody paid attention to her. And then she came back and kind of had her revenge and just killed it and showed them,
wow.
you know, hey, I'm, you know, a star. And so I think she has struggled a lot to be famous, and she was a game changer in the music business.
She talks a lot about these moments too, like they when she talked about these insecurities too in the interview I'd seen. They said, "How do you deal with that?" And she said, "Well, it's the love of the fans. When people tell me that what you've said and what you've done has changed my life, and
mm-hmm.
it gives me a sense of purpose, and I know because of the fans, because of the little monsters, I am, you know, I feel whole and I feel full." But what kind of, I don't want to say bothers me, but what's off-putting thinking about that, what's so vulnerable about that, is the minute the fans don't love you, which fame can be fleeting.
Yes.
Does your sense of self-worth kind of go with it?
It can. I mean, I've seen that happen. Yes. I mean, it's tough, I think, when you see them you know, come back down. And so, yeah, so it's a journey, I guess. And then some people, she's managed to be famous for a long time, you know. And I think before that, you know, the music business was kind of looking for something like that. And she really changed it. She was unpredictable that she did so well. So I'm happy for her. I'm happy for her now in the acting world that she really showed her stuff.
Okay, you know? So you got a chance to meet Bradley Cooper,
yeah,
and you got a chance to see the film early. How did that happen?
So he came to an early screening, and Oliver Platt did a Q&A with him in front of everyone at the after the movie had shown, and it was just a great moment to, like, you know, hear what he behind the scenes. And
wait, did you know he was coming?
I suspected he was coming. Okay. I suspect because they had already done, they had already been up at Toronto's film festival. Gaga and him had come up there. So some people like Dean had interviewed him and things like that up there. So they said somebody was coming, but she's not coming. So.
And you ended up getting some audio
yeah.
of that Q&A session.
Oh, yeah.
And we have the exclusive audio in studio. We have it right. But do I have to take a break right here? We got a break right here.
Okay.
On the other side, hear what Bradley Cooper tells Jerry Nunn about this film. I'm making it real dramatic, real extra. I'm being real extra for no reason. We're filling in for Dave Pliers. Jerry Nunn is Doma T. Pongo. We'll be right back in a moment. 720 WGN.
If I knew it would be the last time, I would have broke my heart in two trying to say part of you. Don't wanna be.
And that's Gaga singing. Oh my gosh, just so touching. Oh my gosh, what do you think? What do you think? You're crying.
I love, you know what's funny, that I really gained an appreciation for Gaga's vocal range and talent.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of randomly. So there's this unreleased version of a Kendrick Lamar song.
Okay.
Kendrick Lamar's first big debut album, Good Kid, Mad City. There's a song called Don't Kill My Vibe on there.
Okay.
One of my favorite records. On YouTube, there's a random version of Lady Gaga singing the chorus. Kendrick says it on the actual album. He's singing it. Mm-hmm. But she's singing the chorus. And she's not even singing. But the way I heard her, because I only knew her for pop.
Sure.
And the way I heard, I started going back into her discography, and I'm like, oh, she's been belting out these mm-hmm. these melodies for a while.
Oh yeah.
And of course, it's obvious now with the album she did with was it Tony Bennett?
Tony Bennett. Yep.
Oh my goodness. So
that really spotlighted her voice. But she started in the piano bars in New York. I mean, she really built her way up to the top. So. There you go.
There we go. we're talking before the break. It's Jerry Nunn. It's Doma T. Pongo. We're in for Dave Plyer until 5 a.m. for you guys. And we're talking before the break about A Star Is Born. By all accounts, from everything I'm hearing, it seems to be an amazing film. I'm watching interviews, and I thought I was just preparing for the show. Before I know it, I'm an hour in, and I'm sucked into the world of Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
Yeah.
But Bradley Cooper shows up, surprisingly, at an early screening of the movie A Star Is Born, and you had a chance to hear from him.
Yeah. So, he just gives behind the scenes, and it's just such a great moment. I'm so glad he comes to Chicago. I love it when the stars come to Chicago and really promote the films and, you know, talk to the audiences, because people want to hear the behind the scenes.
Set up this clip for us. What's this this one we have?
He's talking about different guest stars. There's some great guest stars down there. I mean, her best friend is from Hamilton. Her dad is Andrew Dice Clay, you know, and then there's several more that he talks about in this clip.
Let's take a listen.
Yeah, I really did. It's the most fulfilling experience I've ever had artistically, no question about it. And I've had wonderful experiences, but this felt, I hope I get to do it again, because it felt...
I don't know, man.
Maybe not. That was a good run.
It was a good run.
Time to get off the hamster wheel.
No, it's incredibly...
And you know, the greatest part about it is casting and having these wonderful artists entrust themselves to you. It's just mind-blowing. You know, and I got to, like, the guy who comes in the cop bar and asks for the photo, I went to grad school with him, Gabe Fazio. And he's, you know, and then the Derek Jones, another guy I went to grad school with, is doing the Etta James cover. And Luell is a stand-up comedian that I did All About Steve with, and she's the cashier. And by the way, none of these are favors. They're fantastic. And to be a director, you're able to actually cast it. It's just, it's incredible. And Dave Chappelle I had met And I just, oh, he's incredible. It took me 2.5 years to get him, by the way. I had to fly to Ohio twice. It's hard to get. But I just loved, I wanted that moment in the movie where Jackson has a choice to make. And Dave's story is so, we all kind of know Dave Chappelle's story in a way, you know. And so I just loved him talking about something that almost in the movie you think he's talking about himself, like the actual guy. I don't know, I just, the fact that these people allowed, and Sam Elliott, I mean, Sam Elliott was just incredible. Yeah.
We didn't even mention Dave Chappelle. So did he have a big role in the film, or does he just pop up?
He's a friend of his. He's a friend of his that comes in later on in the film. So, yeah, it's not a huge part, but it's fun to see him.
And it's a serious role for Dave Chappelle, isn't it?
Yeah, he's just so great. I mean, it's great to see him pop up in there. Yeah.
What's interesting to me about this film, too, is funny to hear stars talk about who they're able to get there and how he didn't have to call in a favor. But it's like, it's weird to hear folks at whatever level of the career you are, you have to start from square one, mm-hmm. because it's his first time going from the actor role to the director seat. Right. How often have we seen this actually work? Actors become directors and it's good.
Clint Eastwood, who we talked about before.
And he worked on a film with Bradley Cooper. Was it the one about was it American Sniper?
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Clint Eastwood and Bradley Cooper partner for that one. And yeah. Denzel, I believe, directed Fences.
Yes. They cross over back and forth.
Yeah.
I think they want to have control over more things, and that happens a lot. So.
But people were scared with this being the fifth time this film has been remade.
Yeah. Oh, I thought it was going to be a stinker. I went in and like, oh, this is not going to be good. And then was just won over very quickly by Gaga. I mean, just right at the get-go.
Well, so. I promise, Raj, we get to news on time, but we've got more on this film and a few other films that Jerry has talked about that he's seen. And speaking of Gaga, Gaga fans do not want you to go to the theaters to see
Venom. They are giving bad reviews on Twitter. I don't know if you can pull those up. You can read some of those, but they've been giving bad reviews thinking that, oh, people won't go see Venom, so they'll go to the Gaga film. Which is a weird way of thinking.
Fans are crazy, man. It's 2:30 a.m. We're going to head up to the WGN newsroom. Here with the news is Roger Battish.
All right. Yeah.
It's Jerry Nunn. It's Doma T. Pongo. We're filling some big shoes tonight, filling in for Dave Plyer, who is filling in for everyone else. This is like Radio Inception right now.
Yeah, we're crossing over.
We're crossing over, baby. And we've been talking movies. Jerry Nunn is the go-to guy when it comes to entertainment and movies. You can check more of him out at Nunn on the Run. That's Nunn with two N's, N-U-N-N, on the Run. .com. He's a writer for Windy City Times. He is a friend to the Bill and Wendy Show and a friend to Doma T. Pongo. And so, you know, it's always fun to kick it with you, man.
Yeah, this is really fun. I'm so excited to talk about these movies.
I'm telling you. So before we left for break, we were talking about Venom. Gaga fans.
Yeah.
I throwing poison on Venom.
Right. Well, first off, Venom is, okay, so who Venom is, because people may not know.
Yeah, let's start from the beginning with that.
So he's a comic book character, okay? He was originally from the Spider-Man comics and he's an alien that comes over and takes over people's bodies and things. So this is a new movie that just started the same weekend that A Star Is Born came out. But Venom is kind of its own thing. I saw it this Wednesday, and it's not the best superhero movie, but it's not the worst either. And there's some really funny stuff in it, and that I really enjoyed, a lot of action.
Well, that's not what Twitter user Ann Harrison Mom says. She on Twitter says, I saw Venom last night and had to leave halfway through. My children wouldn't stop crying at how bad it was. Luckily, a second pre-screening of A Star Is Born is about to start, and now we are all crying tears of amazement. Please pray for my eldest. He is in a coma. That's
my
Harrison impression. I didn't even mean to read the last part sarcastically. It caught me off guard there. I didn't know it was going to go in that direction.
Yeah, so these little monsters put out all these tweets and just tried to like talk bad about Venom, thinking that was their game plan. I don't know how they all probably talked to each other and just like, let's do this.
I'm a little disappointed though too, because I heard it's just a special effects fest as far as the movie goes, because Venom is one of those cartoon characters. He dissolves into slime and shapeshifts right. and does some weird things. Mm-hmm. But he was one of my favorite characters. I like the dark characters in okay. the comic book world. Like, you know, Spider-Man is cool, but right. Venom was gangster.
Yeah. Know? Like, he eats people's spleens and
yeah,
he's like this, he looks really scary. So it's kind of good for Halloween time, I think.
It was perfect for this time of year.
Yeah. The problem is it's owned by Sony and there's not doing crossover with a lot of the other franchise. And that's what I was looking forward to.
To see yeah. some of those characters from the other film.
Right. They
did, that has been kind of ruining some of the comic book films, because remember the, was it Fantastic Four, where you had different versions of the different characters?
Mm-hmm.
And even in the other Marvel world with Avengers, you've got mm-hmm. different actors playing the same character. It makes it kind of like 50 Spider-Man movies. It's confusing.
Yeah, like Chris Evans, like, you know, did his last film this week, and so he's not going to be Captain America anymore. So is there going to be a new one? What's going on with all that? And that's going to be confusing for people.
So Gaga fans think that if people go to see Venom, they won't see A Star Is Born.
Right. This one tweet was, just got back from seeing Venom in theater. So disappointed. Lots of Democrat nonsense. Pushing the LGBT agenda down throat, too. And Venom?
And Venom?
Like, that's strange that this person would say that.
Wait, how do we know that these are Lady Gaga fans?
Well, that's what that's the big thing. That's they track that down.
That's the good folks at Vox, where we're reading some of these tweets from. Like people are figuring this out, huh? I mean, and they have a history. The Little Monsters have a history of doing this. That's what Gaga fans are called. Mm-hmm. They past targets have included, according to Vox, mm-hmm. India Ari. They've gone at India Ari.
Oh,
they've gone at Adele.
Wow,
they've gone at Perez Hilton.
Okay,
Ed Sheeran was driven off of Twitter when they targeted him.
Wow. Oh my gosh, we do not need to get these people mad.
Yeah, you do not make the Gaga fans upset. Things
this is
get
like
serious.
The beehive, right? The beehive or whatever it is. How do you say it?
Yeah, this is like the beehive, man. This is like the beehive. So let me read a few more tweets. Hold on. This is a strange form of protest, by the way. This is kind of interesting. Like, just trash the other opening movie.
Mm-hmm.
And see, okay. Someone let's actually go this way. Someone said, beware of fake Venom movie reviews. There are people trying to promote Lady Gaga's A Star Is Born and are fabricating negative reviews. Look out for bots and only trust proper and regular reviewers. So we talk about this fake news thing. The fact that it's happening in the entertainment world, like yeah. for movie reviews, is kind of...
It's strange. It's how people think. That's how their brains are working now, I guess.
This is kind of messed up.
Yeah. I mean, people can read my review about A Star Is Born. It's in the newspaper this week, so... You know, I guess I'm legit.
Yeah, you're legit. You're real news. Look, I hear him swarming.
Oh.
The new beehive, man. Just got back from seeing Venom. Oh, yeah, that's the one you read. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, just saw Venom, and it's literally trash. I'm taking my wife and kids out to see A Star Is Born instead. I heard the rah-rah bee is in it.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God.
This is crazy. They're even gone crazy.
Yeah, I'll do one more. They're even... posing as Marvel fans. Someone says, actually, now this is funny. This gives it away.
Okay.
People are copying and pasting. Curtis, get this. People are copying and pasting the exact same tweet. Three accounts copied and pasted the exact same tweet.
That's how they found out who it was.
That's how they found out that it was Gaga fan. Mm-hmm. So it says, I am the biggest Marvel fan, but I just watched Venom and I don't know what to say. Easily the worst movie this year. I expected so much better and now I'm just disappointed. And about six people just said the exact same thing.
Because they're cut and pasting.
Burner accounts?
Yeah. Yeah, no, yeah, these are burner accounts. I mean, this guy's name is Philly Cheesesteak. This is Chloral Rizzle.
Okay. Philly Cheesecake.
You might be
variations of the names.
Right. Yeah, if it's different names, like trying to throw us off the trail.
Wow, it's so funny. Well, I think people are going to see both, and I don't think it's the same audience at all.
No,
like, I think people that go see Venom are not the Starsborn people.
Yeah.
Right.
This is pretty random. Like, yeah. I'm a Marvel fan.
Okay.
Incidentally, I will go see A Star Is Born, but. Mm-hmm. I'm not choosing between, like, if I feel like seeing, like, a slimy dude bite people's spleens, I'm not trying to see Bradley Cooper fall in love with Lady Gaga. Like, that's
right, it's a so different thing. I mean, you know, it's just going to be so crazy. Did you know about the Ace Comic Convention? Have you heard about this? Talking about comic books?
I haven't, no.
Superheroes? So that, it's brand new. It's coming to Navy Pier October 12th through the 14th, and a lot of the Avengers are coming. Really? So Chris Evans is coming. Tom Hiddleston, who played Loki, is coming.
Oh, wow.
It's the Scarlet Witch. I mean, all these people are coming to Navy Pier, so.
And that's happening when? October 12th?
Yes, October 12th and the 14th, through the 14th.
Is this something so like that? We can expect some cosplay, like a folks dressing up when they go
I
to this type
so.
Of thing?
Or I would be disappointed. Normal? You know, I dressed up at the Wizard World last time. I couldn't help it. I put a little space suit on.
Who do? Oh, Lord.
I did. I got to show you the pictures.
It's only right because it's Halloween time. Later on in the show, we're actually going to talk about, I'm not a fan of Halloween.
Okay. Oh, we're going to get into it then.
Oh, you are a fan of Halloween.
Yeah. Oh, this is going to be great.
Roger Badish, are you a Halloween fan?
What, the candy in the newsroom doesn't give it away? Fake lips, fake fangs, fake mustaches. Are you kidding? I love Halloween.
Okay, yes. Okay.
All right.
Curtis, yeah. Can you please be on my side? We might have a tie. I don't know if I'm going to be outnumbered.
I am on the boat. I am more leaning towards the not Halloween fan.
Okay, good. Okay, we got a debate.
We got a debate going. So later on in the show... Going to talk about, we've got a list of 29 reasons to hate Halloween.
that and you came up with.
Which I came right. Wow. Which was ghostwritten by me. I'm one of these Twitter users who pretends to be someone else.
Did you see what he just did? It was ghostwritten. Get it? Oh, he secretly loves Halloween.
See, you Halloween people. This is what you do. Trick and trick
people.
I got
Roger on my team, so yep. Good luck.
Okay.
We can throw little candies at him.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Kill him with kindness and candy.
I don't know why I did this, man. Let me find a way out of this. We're going to go back. We're going to come back in a moment and talk about the oath because I need to regroup and rewrite some of these articles to make sure it's fail-proof. You're listening to Doma T. Pogo and Jerry Nunn on 720 WGN filling in for Dave Plyer.
Hey.
Don't laugh at me, guys. What are we listening to?
What?
Jerry's face is, are you serious? We've been talking about her all show. I'm guessing this is Gaga.
No.
No, who is this?
Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People.
Yeah, that's Foster the People.
Oh, Foster the People. I don't know.
Do you know the Foster the People?
I don't know. Babe.
Oh, I got some CDs to let you borrow.
Yeah, let's trade CDs. I give you some Kendrick. You give me some Foster the People.
Yeah.
And we trade some music, man.
Yeah, he used to write jingles, so he's very, like, catchy music and stuff.
Got
singer
you.
For that.
Mm-hmm. Got you.
Yeah.
What else? Let's trade some movies, too, because you're the movie man.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to mention that the International Film Festival is coming here. It's the 54th year that they've had this. It's running October 10th through the 21st. So they're going to have a lot of directors come through and some stars come through, some big ones.
Who's expected to come out? Do you know?
There's this new movie called Widows, okay? And the setup is it's four women with nothing in common except the debt left behind by their dead husband's criminal activities. So the widows are going to, like, you know, take over. So Viola Davis is coming.
She's one of the widows. Oh, my God.
Yes. And Gina Rodriguez, who's from Chicago.
Yes.
Be here too. She's coming to the red carpet and director and all kinds of people. So it's going to be fun.
Funny story about Widows. I went to the National Association of Black Journalists Conference.
Okay.
And they had a screening of a few scenes of Widows, moderated by Roland Martin. Then one of the actresses came out. I wish I could think of her name, but it's a diverse mix of women. This is one of the first times you will see an action film with four women leads.
That's so great.
So it's time. Good. It's time. It's such a good, at least from what I saw, such a good thing. Like their husbands die or disappear and they band together and say, ladies, we've got to kick some butt or something. Like they pick up a machine gun and they're running around and they're like killing people. And I'm a sucker for explosions and pretty women. So it was dope.
Powerful women.
Powerful women.
So that's going to be really great. And I'm glad they're coming in town for it.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. What else is coming up? What else should we know about?
So I just saw an early screening of The Oath. Okay, so this is a really,
this one,
I think this movie might have your name all over it. You might need to go see this. So this is Ike Barinholtz. Do you know who Ike Barinholtz
No,
is?
I do not.
So he's from Mad TV.
The guy, is he a voice actor?
I think he does voices and things like that. Uh-huh. Him and Tiffany Haddish are a couple. And so Ike actually came in town to promote it. And Nora Dunn, who's from Chicago, from Saturday Night Live, she's in it, and she came to the screening. And we did an early screening for that. It's coming out, I believe, the 15th, and October 15th. And so the setup is the president is making everyone sign an oath that says he you support the president, and there's a big divide on whether you know, there's perks if you do. You don't have to sign the contract, the oath, but if you don't, you know, things could get kind of rough for you, and things go off the rails. Yeah.
Jeez.
What do you think about that?
Is Tiffany Haddish comic relief in this?
Well, you would think so. And she is funny at parts, but this is a different role for her. And it's a different role for all of them. And I don't want to do a lot of spoilers for this one because it really has a lot of twists and turns and things. But it involves a Thanksgiving family dinner and what happens at their house. Yeah, so
interesting.
So you got people from different political perspectives that are at the dinner, other relatives, you know, because relatives are divided sometimes with right now the political climate and stuff. And this was an important kind of thing, I thought.
How do these funny actors do in a film this serious?
I was really surprised.
Do they fare well? Did Tiffany Haddish, did she make you proud?
Yeah. She really is good. I mean, I don't know. You know, I had seen her in Keanu. Did you see Keanu?
I didn't.
Please tell me. Oh, that was the. You need to see that movie.
That was the cat, the kidnapped cat.
Yes, the kidnapped cat. And it's really, really good. And she had a small part, but she was so good in it.
See, this is why I love this segment, though, because I don't get out as much as I should.
Okay. You get out. You just don't get out to the right places.
That's exactly. Exactly. I get out to work and I go home. That's it. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't summoned, I do not go. So there are so many films that I wish I would have seen.
Sure.
But I love when I get a chance to see comedic actors stretch, because I know there's the sad clown stereotype, like where actors or comedians are really actually more somber or...
Yeah, there could be introverts.
Yeah.
Amy Schumer is an introvert that's, you know, very outgoing. But
And then you get the chance to see them kind of stretch and do well when they get into these roles.
Robin Williams would be a great example of that.
That is a perfect,
right?
Rest in peace.
And Jim Carrey, too.
Yeah, Whoopi Goldberg.
Yeah.
Whoopi Goldberg is too.
Great dramatic stuff.
She's done a lot of dramatic stuff.
Oh, Color Purple.
Yeah.
I thought about in terms of her being an introvert, though.
I think underlying a lot of comics is an introversion in life, that they feel more comfortable alone, yet they explode when they're out on stage and they're vulnerable, and they work that so well, which is why they do comedy so well, and why doing something serious is even harder for them than to do comedy.
Yeah,
because comedy is like a cover for their being an introvert,
an escape.
Yeah,
it's a shield and things like that. But I've had a great opportunity to interview so many, especially female comedians over the years. I mean, I got to be pretty buddy buddy with Joan Rivers. She meant a lot to me. I would bring her wine, and she was like, "As long as you write about me, you know, the gays always show up at my shows." You know, and so many people, you know, Sarah Silverman was like, "I'm so glad you came to my show." You know, it's just I've had such a great opportunity to get to know, like, Lily Tomlin, you know, and have all these like great women that have, you know, been pioneers in comedy.
Sure.
So it's always meant a lot to me.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
It's pretty interesting, though. It doesn't just go for comedy. A lot of folks say that about entertainment, like guys in general. Like, it's funny. I was talking to earlier tonight. I did a gala just before coming here, and it was in Gary, Indiana. It's an organization that exposes minority and underprivileged youth to the aeronautics industry and to the aviation industry. And so, you know, after I do the hosting thing, and I'm just sitting down chatting with people, and I'm like, man, you guys are a breath of fresh air, because I usually, when I'm off, I talk all day. I don't necessarily want to talk. I'm not mean. I don't necessarily want to be verbose or talk to people. I don't. Right. Have you seen that with guys in the industry?
I do it all the time.
Are you the same way?
When I'm not here on the air, I'm home alone. Right. I mean, I've got my family around me.
And
but
you got Rufus?
Well, not anymore. Remember?
I'm so sorry.
That's all right. But I mean, he feels like it feels like he's here with me.
Yeah.
But even then, it was like, you know, Rufus, I'm watching a TV show here. You know, it's and I'll sit and flip through the channels, and I'm comfortable with that alone.
Yeah.
I rarely go out. Okay. I just don't. Even when I'm with Bridget, I don't feel comfortable out in crowds. Mm-hmm. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Now, if someone asks me to go up on stage,
right?
If I'm out at an event,
right?
Boom,
you turn it on.
Yeah, it's on. It just happens. But when I'm, you know, I may wear my WGN hat or the that Blackhawks WGN jacket I've got, going to the grocery store and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I really don't want anyone to recognize me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, just let me get in and out of the store.
Right.
I don't want to have to turn it on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I am an introvert.
But
in heart,
you
want to
get the chance to be yourself. Because, you know, if you're a little too lax or chill, it can be misread.
Mm-hmm.
And that person will remember forever the time that they're like, oh my God, great to meet you. And you genuinely mean, yeah, thanks. Hey, good to see you.
Yeah.
Well, what? What? I bought every album.
Like, Jerry, you seem pretty extroverted, though. Every time I've seen Jerry in the outings, you seem extroverted. Yeah.
You know what? I'm not.
See?
Talk about drinking. I used to rely on drinking to be, you know, more social and stuff. And so now that I don't do that, it's been more of a powerful thing. Like, I'm like, oh, I didn't really need booze to, like, talk to people,
I was fine
in a social situation. But I feel it's exhausting. I'm tired. I need to get away. Now I'm learning to take breaks and just, I can't entertain all the time.
Because you two guys are alike as far as running at 100%, 200% of the time.
Yeah.
Seriously.
I always
joke with Domati about how he's burning the candle at both ends, because he's always doing stuff 24/7. And I see you on social media all over I'm thinking, he's cloned himself. Seriously.
Well, it is not on the run. It's not sitting around none.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, man, did I used to do this when I was young? And I think I did.
You did and didn't realize it.
Exactly. Because while you're within the eye of the storm, you don't really see the storm around you.
Right.
And so when the storm either goes away or when you have to walk through the storm to get outside of it, when you're all done doing stuff, you really don't understand. You don't feel what everyone else is doing around you. You're just in your own world.
Yeah.
And I used to do that when I was a lot younger. When I lived in Vegas and I was working in Vegas, I was working.
Uh-huh.
I'd work at a radio station in the morning and midday. I'd go teach for 4 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I'd go work a gig over at one of the casinos.
What they say, when you do what you love, it doesn't feel like work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that Eye of the Storm analogy you used. Dr. Battish's book, The Eye of the Storm, December 2018, is coming out.
Wow, I missed that deadline.
You better get to writing. I need to leave.
You're listening to Domati Pongo doing news, Roger Battish, and, of course, Jerry Nunn on the run right here filling in for Dave Flyer on 720 WGN. These are scary times we're living in right now.
Music is so classic.
Classic.
Yes, and they're having the new versions coming out, the Halloween with Jamie Lee Curtis.
Really?
There's a new Halloween coming out.
Are you excited for it, or do you think they're beating a dead horse with this?
Well, it's kind of like the Cher tour. You know, she just can't say goodbye. This guy cannot be killed. And it's taking place after the first movie, after the first two movies. So they've retrograded this whole thing where all the other movies don't count.
I love certain classics that never die, like Freddy and Jason, and certain movies remain iconic. Like, I even shuddered when it first came on for a second. Like, I went back to my childhood for a moment. It was like, oh, it's not real. It's a radio show. We're good. Right. I like that. But at the same time, you got Fast and Furious. What are they on? 9, 8, 10?
Right.
I mean, after a minute, it just feels like Hollywood is losing creativity. Or maybe they're just retransformed. But it's like listening to the same song over and over. And it's like, yeah, it's still good.
Did you see A Quiet Place?
But yeah, no, I didn't see that. Yeah.
No, you didn't see that one.
You should just assume I haven't seen anything.
Okay. Well, that was one that came out this year that was very original and did very well.
And it did very well.
But Jerry, wouldn't you agree that the common saying in Hollywood nowadays is, for the most part, is there are no new ideas? if they can make money off of a franchise that keeps making money, mm-hmm. they'll keep making the pictures, even if all the pictures are the exact same.
Well, and it's happening in TV. We have Murphy Brown coming back, and Will and Grace, and all these reboots and things too. So
yeah, that's true.
Well, you know, they say there's nothing new under the world. So I'm sure if we dug into anything else, there's a format that we all follow that kind of just, you know, repeats itself. You know?
Right, right.
You know, but speaking of Halloween, talking about things that what I don't like about Halloween are too many remakes, and what I also don't like about Halloween is pretty much everything else Halloween.
What did you not? What is this going back to your childhood? Did you not get enough candy as a kid, or what?
I don't know what it is. I've been deprived of it. You know, I've never been a holiday guy.
Okay,
really?
No holidays.
Any holidays?
Not really. I pretend to enjoy. Like, if I come across some festive things, I'll enjoy them. It's an opportunity to be merry with friends, I guess, but I'm not the guy who's going to actively decorate my home with Christmas lights.
Oh, you're killing me.
If the home ends up decorated, fine. I won't rip them down, but I'm just not.
So you're not quite the Grinch, but kind of?
I'm a
He's a semi-Grinch.
A friendlier Grinch, you know?
Yeah.
A softer Grinch.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love decorating. Maybe that's what it has to do with me. I love the whole decorating thing.
Yes, yeah. And the voice you hear, we didn't tell them who we are. Jerry Nunn, Doma T. Pongo, Roger Battersham News. Curtis is producing. We're in for Dave Plyer. And I pulled this list of 25 reasons to hate Halloween. Roger and Jerry are going to disagree with every one of them.
Yeah.
Curtis is going to teeter on the middle like Susan Collins. And
I'm more decisive than Suzanne Collins.
Oh, okay, good, because I'm going full Lindsey Graham, baby.
Uh-oh.
So,
wow. Okay. I'm going to demand loyalty.
So President Batters, check this out. So they've got a list of 25 reasons to dislike Halloween. And folks, you let us know whose side you're on, man. Text us 312-981-7200. Let us know whose side you're on. Yes, maybe it's something from our childhood. I don't know, but I'm a bit of a Grinch. I'll start with this one.
All right.
On this list, courtesy of thisisinsider.com, candy corn starts taking over the shelves.
Oh, well, I don't like candy corn.
No one likes candy corn. No.
I like candy corn up from 1 through 4 pieces. And then after that, because I'm older than you guys and I don't have all my teeth, I have to worry about whether I'll have any more. And two, I've spent so many years liking the taste of them that now when I've had enough, I've had enough.
Right, right.
Does that make sense?
Yes. You played out candy corn. You've eaten too much.
Yeah. Well, not too much. It's just I don't mind it, but there's other tastes out there for
Roger,
Halloween.
We've seen the candy buckets in the newsroom. I think you've had enough.
I used to eat the flavors separately, so I would, like, as a little kid, the little candy corn, you would just, like, bite off a little bit.
Yeah, the white part, the orange, and then the chocolate part.
Because I don't like my food all mixed together either, so...
Well, I agree with the comment on the side. Why doesn't anyone just admit that candy corn is gross? I feel like anyone who eats candy corn and loves it, like you guys reluctantly, you know, you're like, anyone who eats candy corn and loves it can't be trusted.
If you had asked the 10-year-old me, I would have said, heck yeah, and I would have eaten a whole bag.
What?
Yes. I loved them when I was a kid.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's candy corn, man.
Well, that's not the only candy around. I mean, I'd go there for the chocolate. I mean, and the full size bars when you're, you know, trick or treating around.
Oh, yeah, those little dinky. Oh, please.
Oh, man, I hate candy corn, man. Okay, all right. Let's go do this one.
Okay.
Friends try to drag you to haunted houses.
What's wrong with that?
It's terrible.
I just dragged my friend to a haunted house tonight.
He's
what
the one
talking
dragging
about?
Man, no. Yeah. No, I got friends in Inglewood. If I wanted to be chased, I would hang with them.
Wow, that's real. I mean, come on.
That was bad. I apologize to the streets for that one. I'm sorry. That was bad. I couldn't resist.
But you want
to
know something? Everyone on the streets right now is shaking their head. Yeah.
Well, we live in scary times, but I mean, I think it's a break to go into the haunted house and escape reality for a little bit.
But here's the thing. I think nowadays everybody is trying to outdo the other haunted houses. And after a while, it's it's overkill, if you'll excuse the expression. I like the ones that are out in the forest, the ones the park district used to put together. I don't know if they're still doing it. But those were, those were good.
See, those are the words, because it's like, it's bare bones. Because I get what you're saying. A lot of techie, like a lot of special effects and some of these. And it gets really creative, which is dope for like people who are really into the art of creating like the scene of something. But in the forest, you kind of wonder, like, does that guy work here? Like, is he a part of this?
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Real. Yeah. If you're inside a building, it's like you walk up to the place going, okay, everything, you know, the lights will be flashing, the this and the that, and I know it's going to be mechanized, and I know they're going to have makeup. But when you're walking through the forest and you have no clue as to what's going on, except for maybe the scenes where it's, you know, they're supposed to be in a doctor's office, and it's, you just walk by,
right,
you know, and you and there's an arm cutting someone else's arm off or something like that, you know, that's preset, but you don't know who's hiding in the trees.
What is the scariest haunted house situation you guys have been to, or the best, or however you want to?
Okay, well, last weekend I went to Fright Fest up at Six Flags Great America.
Oh, word. How was that?
That was surprisingly really good, because I hadn't been. So they're doing it just specific days, so you have to really check the website when to go. But they had a new horror section, haunted maze, that's based on Hellfest. It's in a movie. So they did some great things where they had all these mannequins sitting there, but then there's like a real person. And you don't know who's going to jump out.
And it just pops up out of nowhere.
Yes.
And, oh my God.
So they had six haunted houses out there. They run the rides in the dark, and then they have zombies and people wandering around the park after six.
And then you get on a roller coaster after all of that adrenaline rush.
Roller coaster and lights are out. So it's completely dark at night.
Ugh.
So that's a lot of fun.
Yeah. That does sound fun. I can't lie.
I had a blast.
I went to Statesville.
Okay. Yeah.
That
trip.
Yes. Is that in Joliet? Where's this place? No. Statesville, Illinois. Yeah. Statesville Prison.
Yeah.
Where is
it? Yeah.
Statesville. Way out in the burbs.
I think it is Joliet.
I thought it was good.
So it's out in the burbs. Went with my fam. Statesville actually was a prison. They transformed the whole place into this whole scene. So you walk in, and what's really cool about this haunted house, you don't know this, but as you're standing in line, you'll know this before you get there, unless you've been there. As you're standing in line, they just terrorize you, like on the way in, like you're not even in the haunted house yet, and they're already messing with you. And the thing that made me so uncomfortable, one, I'm scared of clowns.
Sure.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wait, regular clowns or the scary clowns, CLOWNZ?
Regular clowns make me uncomfortable.
All right. Mm-hmm.
But I can pretend to be cool. Right. Clowns with the Z, with the fangs, the it thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I ain't with it. So I'm in the line. And these clowns, you know, start chasing us or whatever. And if you don't react, because they can't really touch you. So
right. They're not supposed to, yeah.
Yeah, so you're good. But I remember there was one group, they come in. They're in line, and they're waiting in line, and all of a sudden these clowns start chasing them, so they start running. And so the clowns are chasing them, they're running, everybody's laughing at this group that's running. One of the clowns is chasing them, starts running on all fours. Ooh. I swear that was the scariest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That was scary.
If you see a 6-foot person running on foot and drop down on all fours, I said, this isn't of God. I don't know what this is. I started praying. And then we get inside, and you see people, like, they've got the ear gauges and the black nail polish. Like, these are kids who look like they dress like this normally. And so I'm like, you about this life. This isn't, you're not acting. Mm-hmm. You might really hurt me.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
Yeah, this is out in Lockport. I looked it up. So it's
Lockport. That's
out.
Where it is.
Yeah,
oh,
it's way out, but it's worth the drive. I mean, it's a lot of fun.
Never go to Lockport.
Yeah, I have a fear of clowns, too. It started when I was really little. My grandmother had a punching bag. It was an inflatable clown punching bag, and it was up in the top of the closet, and it just scared me so bad as a kid.
Wait, she never deflated it? She just left it inflated?
It was, no, that's the deflated. When it was deflated, it's even scarier. But yeah, because, you know, you would punch it as a kid, and then it bounces back and comes at you again.
Yeah.
As a clown.
Oh my God.
Yeah,
and it was always smiling.
Yeah. Stephen King really knew what he was doing with it, that whole it.
He struck a chord with that one. Mm-hmm. I think that's the reason I'm probably scared. I don't know. What sticks out on the list? What you got there on this list?
I went to the House of Torment was the one I went to tonight.
Oh, yeah.
And that was really, it was so good. So what they do, there's several little haunted houses in there, but immediately they took two of us in, me and my friend, that I had dragged up there, I guess, and they strapped us into wheelchairs, and then they put a hood over you where you can't see anything, and they drive you around with all these like scary noises and stuff in the haunted house. So that's how it starts off.
That's, oh my God.
Which is probably a trigger for some people. People are probably scared to get strapped in and not be able to move. And
I will say that people should know, research the house and know what your triggers are.
Yes.
Because sometimes, and even though I'm like, I'm not entirely comfortable when I go to haunted houses, mm-hmm. I'm going to walk in. Are there any clowns? No clowns? Okay, we're good.
Oh, yeah.
Some folks freak out and it's like, you didn't know what your triggers were, like state, like, you know what I mean?
I wouldn't recommend people that are scared of clowns to go at all because something can scare them.
Or maybe claustrophobic people.
Right.
Like going to it, like you knew before you walked up here that you're going to be in a dark, tight space.
Yeah, there's an inflatable thing where you have to push through. Oh, yeah, that's really playing on people's fears, yeah.
Have you ever gone to a haunted house and learned more about your friends, more than you wanted to know about your friends? Like, who would push you that Curtis is not to say, what happened, man, and do you still hang with the guy?
Yes, I still do hang with the guy. He's one of my best friends. I don't know if you guys ever heard of the Terror on the Railroad.
No.
In Union, Illinois. It's at that the Illinois Railway Museum. I went there with my friends, oh gosh, when I was probably a freshman or sophomore in high school, and there's two trains that you would walk through, and the second one that we went on, we were started going through, and there's different rooms, and I also am not a fan of clowns either. One of these rooms had a clown in it, and my friend pushed me into the room with the clown, and I freaked out and booked it through the rest of the thing. Just ran. I didn't even see the rest of the thing because I just wanted to get the heck out of there because the guy is sitting there like in like the seat, and my friend knew that the guy was in there. I didn't, and scared the heck out of me. I went running, and so that was a
oh man.
Surprisingly, I'm still friends with the guy, but yeah, that was
he threw
not
you
a fun
to the
moment.
Wolves, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, to the clowns. To the
hey, we've got some texters. I don't know if you got the text up, Curtis. You know, and of course, I'm asking to read the text messages because I like what it says. So I don't know if you see this one, but
I do see it. One is for Team Domati. Halloween is overrated. Real life is scary enough. The sweets I like are the things like ice cream and cookies, cake and pie. This is from Steve listening in Louisville.
Steve in Louisville, you the man. Smart man.
Come on. I mean, does he want cake and pie when you go door to door? There's a slice of
bring
pumpkin
an extra,
pie.
Extra big bag. Just put that whole cake right in there, you know?
I mean, I'm trying to fix Halloween for these people, but I can't. There's only so much I can do.
One of my neighbor's houses, actually, they made hot dogs and they had cookies for giving out, like,
well, that's not bad.
Yeah. And one year, my dad actually, it was a really hot Halloween. My dad made margaritas for the adults.
Hello. Thank you.
That's so cool.
That's a fun one.
And you know, the hot dogs would be pretty good because, you know, you got to take the kids out before it gets dark.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's light, and that's kind of dinner time, right before dinner time, and the kids are going to be hungry, and you don't want them eating all the candy yet. So have a hot dog.
Have a hot dog.
There you go. I like that idea.
Yeah. Have a hot dog. Okay.
Text us. 312-981-7200. I'm sure there are a lot of you who agree with Jerry and Roger because I see more Halloween pro-Halloween people than I see than more often than not when I'm out on October 31st. Like, if you're all walking through the WGN Radio newsroom, there are cobwebs everywhere. Mm-hmm. There's pumpkins and decoration
people
and all of this.
Dress up, yeah.
Oh, my God. We're going to get to that, actually. Okay. When we come back, we're going to talk about Halloween costumes, your favorite costumes, and some on this list, which also is why I hate Halloween. The freaking costumes. It's 720 WGN. Yeah, it would help if I turned on Jerry's mic a moment ago. Sorry about that, sir. Domati Pungo, Jerry Nunn, filling in for Dave Plyer. It is, time is it? 3:26. The time is flying. I'm having a blast. That was Rihanna Disturbia. I love that record, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one.
Rihanna and Gaga. This show, you're changing my musical taste right now.
Good. I'm a good influence. And maybe change your opinion on Halloween.
Yeah, I don't know about that one. Okay. This is another reason I do not like Halloween. Number 11 on this list, there's pressure to outdo your costume from last year. Let's say you really nailed a Halloween costume one year. The following year, you expect to top it and so on and so on. It becomes a vicious cycle.
Well, then shoot low one year, and then you won't have that the following year, right?
Then you're 5 years in. Next thing you know, you're... You know, you're dressed up as Lady Gaga with the meat outfit on, and you're trying to think how much you're going to do in 2019, man.
So I do want to tell you guys about the Halsted Street Halloween Parade. Do people know about that? I feel like I've talked about it before, and people didn't know that Boys Town has a huge Halloween parade.
So I've seen people at bars in the area looking like they came from somewhere, and I never know where they've come from.
Okay, so it's actually on Halloween. It's on Wednesday, October 31st. This is the 22nd year that Boys Town has done this huge Halloween parade. So they block it off kind of like the, you know, the Pride Parade. It's from Belmont Avenue to Brompton Avenue. The people register for costume contest at 5 p.m. There's $4,000 in prizes up for grabs. And then the bars all over the place have their own individual, you know, contests and stuff. So there's a lot of money out there.
Prizes for the best costume?
Best costume, yes. And this is the 7th year for the Chicago Thriller Flash Mob. So they come dressed as zombies, and they play Thriller over and over again, and they do the dance.
Word.
It's really cool. It's a great video moment when they're watching the parade.
And this is on Halsted?
Yes. On Halloween.
Okay. Are you going to be there?
Of course. I'll be out there. I go out and take pictures of the community and work for different websites and, you know, send it to them. So,
what has been your best Halloween costume?
My best one? Oh, that's a great question. Well, the nun's my very, you know, this old standby.
Signature.
So I can do that one. Oh, gosh. I did a gesture, I think, last year. We go out as WGN to Chicago Costume and do little commercials for them and take some costumes. And so they have some great stuff out there.
Nice. So
Roger went with us one time.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. I think I'll see some pictures.
Doctor Strange. Yes. I looked so cool in that costume. I did.
Yeah, I loved your line for that video. That was
the which one?
Your line, what you said.
Yeah. So, and I put on a metal helmet.
Oh, right.
Remember? And whoever was videotaping, I says, yeah, you could be in heavy metal. And I let the visor drop, clanged.
Oh, right. Yeah. We have so much fun with that.
Yeah, it was fun. We had, we dressed up as superheroes on that one.
Mm-hmm. We did.
Yeah, that was very cool. I like that. I haven't been able to go back because it's been on days and at times when I've got other commitments, unfortunately. So,
well, try to squeeze this in one day.
Yeah, I will.
I think I pinpointed why I don't like Halloween.
Okay.
Why? Because I wear costumes?
I think I figured it out.
What?
So my best costume was in what grade was I in? Might have been fourth grade.
Okay.
And so my friends and I were all gonna go as different Mortal Kombat characters. And so, you know, there was Sub-Zero. He had the blue. If you guys know Mortal Kombat, they have like this blue ninja outfit. And then you have Reptile, who has the green ninja outfit.
Okay.
So my parents I didn't grow up poor necessarily, but my parents were just fiscally conservative.
Frugal. Yeah.
You know, they were frugal. Yeah.
Okay.
Or one of those things where you may be poor and you don't know you're poor. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, So my costume was really makeshift. So I had like a turtleneck, which is supposed to be like the under the ninja thing.
Okay.
Like a green vest and then like a ski mask, not an actual mask that you're supposed to wear for.
Oh.
And I had like these, my sisters were in karate class.
Sure.
And so they had the gloves that you wear, like the red gloves. And so I tried to do something to make them look green.
Oh.
To put them on.
Do you have pictures of this? I want to see this.
God, no. My therapist has them. And so then I go to school. I think I'm like, you know, mom, I said, like, does this look okay? Yeah, you look fine. You look just like the thing that you're trying to be. She doesn't even know what it is. And so I go to school and they're just like, and that's not it, bro.
Bullied you.
I didn't really get bullied. It was more like pity. It was like, which is worse than bullying. Like, if you get bullied, you just retort back. It's more like, oh, man, you tried, man.
It's like nobody wants you to walk with them.
Yeah, it's like, you want some candy corn?
Yeah, I feel like you should have had other people with you, too, to kind of help, you know.
Yeah, to help me pull this thing together.
Yeah.
You know, at 10, I didn't have resources, man.
See, I would have had your back. I would have been dressed up as one of the other characters.
I'm saying you would have helped me out, man. Roger's got my back, man.
Oh, heck yes. You better believe it.
He's got our back with the news, too, right?
I would have, you know what I would have gone. I'm not tall enough to pull this off, But if you remember Big Trouble in Little China, do you remember the movie, Jerry?
Yeah, I do.
So, you know, the those three Oriental fighters, I would have been the one that had electricity coming out from my hands, that had that huge bamboo-type hat that hung way over his face.
Yeah, that's similar to the Mortal Kombat people.
Okay, yeah, then yeah. I would have
like
been,
Raiden.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would have been that.
Okay.
That's what I would have been, and I would have had maybe sparklers in my hands.
Oh, you know, a fire hazard, Roger.
Cool. Well, hey, I live dangerously.
Do we have to take a break here, Curtis, or are we just up there? Oh, we're going straight to news. Roger Badish, a.k.a. Raiden from Mortal Kombat, a.k.a. the Electric Ninja. we're going to go to news. It is 3:32. Here's Roger Badish. WDN is 3:38. Doma T. Pongo, Jerry Nunn in for Dave Plyer. And I was just telling Jerry, I think I know what I'm going to be for Halloween this year.
Yes, talk about it.
My girlfriend has a bald head.
Okay.
Thought it would be super funny if she goes as Tupac.
Okay.
And if I'm B.I.G. I don't know. What you think?
Yeah.
I'm going to do the Coogee sweater with the Timberlands. She's going to do the bandana with the nose ring. She's going to be a cute Tupac. I don't know.
You should get like one of those portable speakers and do some music and stuff.
And play some music.
That would be really cool.
That would be cool. That's if I do. If I actually go through with it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to get out of my Grinch ways, man. Be a little more festive.
I'm happy. See, things are changing.
Things are changing, man. Things are changing.
Okay. Well, let's talk about Kardashians, because I always love, you know, a Kardashian story. Kim Kardashian is filing a $6 million lawsuit against that bodyguard and the Paris robbery that happened years ago, right?
Yeah. Give us a refresher. So Kanye and Kim Kardashian went to Paris. I don't think she was with Kanye at the time not with him as relationship wise, but physically with him at the time. And she was robbed for millions of dollars.
And she paid them a lot of money. OK, she paid them. This is a $6 million lawsuit that she's doing. So she paid them a lot of money to do a job that they didn't do. So, you know, she's got a case.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And good lawyers, right? The Kardashians have incredible lawyers. Because what are they?
Of course.
They always say crazy stuff, and it always comes back to bite them. So they have to have a good team behind
Absolutely.
Them.
So she's suing her bodyguard for allowing her to be robbed.
Right. I mean, if somebody doesn't do a good job, what they're hired to do.
You think this is...
I wonder how much she paid him in the first place. Like, that would make a difference, right?
That does make a difference. Or is she suing him for the amount that she lost? Which kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Well, right.
That's right,
true.
Right.
And but, then this is 2 years ago. So this is a while ago. I guess it takes a while to go through, you know, all
to actually
channels.
Make the lawsuit actually happen. So 2 years later, she's now filing a lawsuit. So this is the thing. This is why the story is so interesting to me. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you could sue someone every time. Or sue an employee every time they did a bad job.
I think people do.
They do that?
Don't you think? I mean, if somebody like serves too hot a coffee at McDonald's, then they sue them, right? I mean, things like that.
That is true. But does your boss sue you? Like, does your manager say that coffee was too hot? I'm going to sue you.
Yeah. I don't know. This is...
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what's kind of messed up to me.
I definitely like to sue some people over the years.
That's what I'm saying. So if you could, if you, in past jobs, pre-radio, pre-media, if you had any pre-radio, pre-media, or maybe even in media, if you could have sued a former employer or maybe a colleague or a peer, what would it be for? And what was the circumstances?
I worked in restaurants a lot, and I feel like they're not set up very well. So I would sue for something like that because I was like not getting paid. You know, you get paid $3 an hour. You got no insurance. You know, it's a tough biz. There's not like a lot of support. The customer's always right. I mean, it's a rough business. Yeah. And I was in it. I mean, I still bartend sometimes and been over 20 years.
Right.
So it's
and it's still
it's a messed up system. It's basically asking people to come in the restaurant and pay their employees. So I think it's messed up.
I always thought that didn't make sense how much how restaurants are and bars are able to pay that far below the minimum wage. I should be able to sue for that.
But then they boss their employees around, right?
Yeah.
But they don't pay them. I just think it's so strange.
And then because they're underpaid, they're looking at you crazy because your tip was 20 8%, and it should have been 25% or whatever they think it should have been when they're looking at you sideways. I don't know. If I could sue a former employee, my first job was Subway.
Okay.
You would be surprised how often meat fell on the floor.
Uh-huh. Oh, gosh.
And they would take, perhaps, say you got a pack of turkey or whatever. They take the rest of the pack that was on top of it and still put it back in the canister.
People do not want to hear
the
that.
The thing that physically touched the floor, I will say that most of the time that was thrown away.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's still pretty disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
That's nasty.
Mm-hmm.
If I could sue my old boss who said, don't waste the meat, don't, I would sue them for that, yo.
Yeah, that sounds like a good case if you had video of that or something, you know.
You know.
What are they called, sandwich makers? What was your title?
I was a sandwich artist, yes.
Sandwich artist.
I was a sandwich artist, yes.
Wow.
Yes, yes. I was a curator of lettuce.
Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There's some skills involved. That's not an easy job. People probably think it is.
No, working at Subway was, I didn't realize how much skill it took until I go to Subway now and I'm irritated at how slowly they move. Because, you know, and to speed them up, I shouted out quick, like, let it, just grab it, put it on there, keep it moving.
Yeah, isn't that funny how we hold on to that stuff? Like, at restaurants, I'm still very critical, you know? They didn't offer coffee well. Oh! Horrible.
And while
horrible
I was,
service.
Yes. While I was there, I didn't care. Like, I didn't pride myself on how quickly I made sandwiches or how beautiful I made it look. But now that I'm not working there, it's funny how we can be. Like, now I'm looking at them like, look at them.
Yeah, they're not artists.
They're not artists. Counting out the meat in front of the customer.
And those are all run differently, right? I mean, all the different subways.
Yeah, the franchises. Yeah, so there are some standards, but you
can
kind of
do
that thing.
Not all the meat on the floor goes back.
This is that one place. This is not an indictment of all Subways, and this is also a Subway I worked at when I was 16 or 15 years old. So take that.
Times have changed.
Yeah.
The meat's
for
fresh.
What it's worth. Curtis, have you ever wanted to sue, if you could sue, a boss or a coworker?
Yes. So I worked in retail. I worked at a retail store in my hometown for about a year and a half, almost 2 years, and they had a little like a rewards program that they had, and if we sold enough of them, we would get like an extra bit of bonus. Same thing like if we sold like any of the additional like insurance plans with any of the items that they might have purchased. If we sold any additional parts of that, we would get a little bit of a commission from it. Well, in the chance that they had to return the item and they returned the insurance plan, we got the money that we made from that taken out of our next paycheck.
Oh.
Whoa.
Yep.
That's tough.
It was never a really motivating factor to really sell any of the additional plans and stuff that they had when, in the case that it had to be returned, the item that you sold had to be returned, the money would get taken out of your next paycheck if they returned the insurance plan or service plan, whatever it was called.
I think this is illegal, though. I mean, this is not. There's laws that don't let you.
It's a pretty big company. So I'm not going to name it because I'm not going to get in trouble. But
you might have a lawsuit.
That's a legitimate one. Yeah. I don't know how much exactly would have had gotten taken out of, but that's something that has happened before in my experience with retail. But I have a lot of sympathy for the retail workers now since I've worked in retail.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
Especially when, you know, we're talking about the holidays coming up. Especially
people are going to return things
Friday
like crazy.
And everything. Yeah, and everybody gets frustrated. It's like they're trying their best. You know, retail is such a revolving door industry. People come and go like that.
It's a thankless job, really. Yeah, and at Christmas time, it's really bad.
Yeah, so around Christmas time and stuff like that, if you're going to be holiday shopping, do it online if you can't deal with the crowds, or, you know, just be patient with the retail workers that you're working with.
Yeah, I don't think this is reasonable though for Kim Kardashian to sue. I guess I got to know the circumstances of what happened, where he was supposed to be, like what that is. I would be upset if I, especially in the millions of dollars, I pay someone to do a job and they don't do it. I do empathize with that.
Right. It's a whole other level with her, with the Kardashians.
It's a whole other level. I think I'm just bringing it down to my little...
to your sandwich.
To my middle class. to my sandwich.
But she makes so much money as it is. I mean, that family is worth a ton of money. Yeah.
They'll never spend that money.
Yeah. They'll never spend the $6 million. Mm-hmm. It's just going to go into more advertisements for their product line and stuff
That's true.
Like that. You know what I mean?
But on the other end, we think because people have a lot of materials that they may not have a sentimental value to some of them or sentimental attachment, but maybe they do. Maybe that it was more than just, I love this diamond necklace. Maybe it was, oh, this is the one my husband bought me, or this is the one.
Or in
that,
their family, the Kardashian legacy family jewels.
Heirloom or jewel. Yeah. So there's some things that you can replace, but you kind of can't replace.
I'm sympathetic. I think we're all sympathetic to what happened.
Yeah.
You know, that definitely showed a different light to her back then a few years ago.
Another entertainment story I'm paying attention to tonight, the actress Awkwafina.
I love some Awkwafina. I loved her. Crazy Rich Asians. She made that movie.
I haven't even seen Crazy Rich Asians, but I heard it was great. But Awkwafina is a character in it. Explain really quickly who Awkwafina is, and I'll tell the folks why I'm talking about it.
She's a comedian that was kind of an unknown comedian and has just blown up. I mean, really, just recently, she was in the Ocean's 11 or Ocean's, what was it, the women version? She was in that, and then Crazy Rich Asians. It needed some humor in that movie, and she just takes it and runs with it. I mean, she is so funny.
And they were talking about, this is one of the first times that you had a lot of Asian Americans or lead Asian American actors in a film. And Awkwafina is the first Asian American woman to host SNL in 18 years.
Wow.
So, yeah, she is the fifth Asian ever to host Saturday Night Live. And in her opening monologue, she paid tribute to Lucy Liu, who hosted the show in 2000.
Okay.
Gave her props for paving the way for other Asian women, which I thought was pretty cool. What got me about this, though, was I'm always surprised with, it's kind of like sports, how we go back and forth with these stats. And I know it can be tense. We talk about race so much, but I also think that it's interesting that in a country that has come so far, that is so progressive, and I don't mean that in a political sense, but just progressive in terms of the arc of history, that we still have firsts.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that this is, that there can still be a first in so-and-so year, or the first, like, I mean, just a few seasons ago of SNL, the first African-American woman cast member.
Right.
You know, it's kind of weird. I don't know.
It's breaking that glass ceiling, right? It happens in the Oscars, awards, all this kind of thing. And the Asian community has, you know, has a long way to go in media. It was Fresh Off the Boat has really changed things a lot for regular television.
And I thought that was a good show, yo.
That's so funny.
I love Fresh Off the Boat. And I think what's really cool about, and especially, that's why I love your perspectives on movies too, because we act like just, like characters can't be relatable because of their background. So my parents are immigrants from Ghana. I'm Ghanaian. I take trips back to West Africa every year since 2016. Okay. And when I watched Fresh Off the Boat, it just rung true as an immigrant family. And then independent of that, it's just funny.
Right.
And so often growing up, I watched TV and I looked at people who didn't look like me and I loved it. I mean, I love these shows. Al Bundy didn't look like my household, but it was a good show, Married with Children. So, I mean, and I think that's what frustrates me. Sometimes when we talk about the industry, we talk about what would work, what might work, what won't, because of what demographics look like. And a good story is just a good story.
Yeah. But it's important for little kids to see themselves on TV or in movies and things like that. I mean, Fresh Off the Boat broke another, you know, it'd been a long time since, it had been since Margaret Cho had American Girl, like way before that. And actually, I got to talk to her about that and how, you know, it's such an important show to Asian people. Now more things have been coming out, but wow, it's tough. And, you know, even in the gay community, you know, it's a tough thing for Asians. They don't have an Asian gay bar. There's not one. You know, and they had like a little club called Asian and Friends, you know, that they would kind of go out.
Wow.
But it's, you know, it's really tough for that community. And I hope to see more, you know, ceilings broken with that.
Absolutely. And it's on some level disrespectful to the general market to say that if the general market doesn't see someone that looks like them, that they won't go see the film. Like we saw that myth dispelled with Think Like a Man. And Kevin Hart. And we had a whole bunch of string of black films that are doing well. Kevin Hart still, Night School is out right now.
Right.
And he's actually, we were talking earlier this morning about comedic actors who are doing these more serious roles. He's got a serious role coming up in a film on the way.
I heard about that.
Yeah. I haven't heard much about it. I don't know if it's finished or if people have seen it yet. I haven't heard much about it. But it just goes back to the point of even if, with these diverse films, even if you're not from that community, it doesn't mean that you can't appreciate the art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. like Awkwafina has to prove herself as a comedian first and get everyone's name, and then she can do serious things one day, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Good stuff. Mm-hmm. We got to go to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to Doma T. Pongo, Jerry Nunn, filling in for Dave Plyer, 720 WGN.
All right, a little Hotel California there, the Eagles, right? Yeah, a little classic rock. There is some great concerts coming to the Chicago area in October. We have Elton John, you know, classic guy there at United Center. He's doing two nights, October 26th and 27th at United Center.
I might be mistaken, but I thought he was retiring soon.
This is supposed to be his farewell tour, but it's like Cher. He could like keep going and going.
I was
going to
say, how long has he been farewelling?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's taken a while to get here. He's been saying goodbye to Europe probably and, you know, around the country. But yeah, he's a great, you know, he's a great show. I've seen him a few times and, you know.
I've heard great things about his live show.
Yeah.
And I just love when artists like that, especially like icons, mm-hmm. still have it and can right. keep it going. I fear, because my favorite genre was hip-hop.
Okay.
And hip-hop is such a young man's sport that I fear that if not for rappers like Jay-Z, who push the envelope forward, mm-hmm. who allows the music to mature, talk about his wife, his kids, and just life as just an adult man, mm-hmm. like I feared for a while where hip-hop would go. And, right. and especially like lyrical content, like people actually talking about something. So anyway, when I look at the Elton Johns and the Paul McCartneys of the world, I'm like, this is who I think you know, Jay-Z is probably the oldest relevant rapper in the game right now.
And what do you think of Chance the Rapper? What do you think of him?
I think he's really dope.
Yeah.
I like Chance a lot. I like him more as a human being than I do as an artist.
I mean, he does so much for like education and kids.
Absolutely. Yeah, I just spent $1 million for mental health services, and those have been gutted in terms of at the state level, mental health services in some of these neighborhoods that need them the most. You know, mm-hmm. I spent the last few days covering extensively the Jason Van Dyke trial, and at the root of it were mental health problems for Laquan McDonald, who had been through so much in his life to even get to the point where he was. And so mm-hmm. with programs like what Chance is doing. So I love that he's championing that. I love his music too, but I love yeah. him as a person. But I'm getting to that point. I'm getting closer to 30. The closer I get to 30, the less I can listen to Chance and the less I listen to it. It's like,
oh.
I'm getting to the point where I'm kind of like, that's for the kids. But it's good okay. music. It's good music.
He's good. Yeah, he's good. I just saw him he was at a movie premiere. He was trying to be Chance the actor for this movie called Slice. It was a horror movie with pizza involved.
With pizza
yeah.
involved.
Yeah, it was like his video director made this thing and he was at, but he does appearances all over Chicago.
Was it good?
It's so great. I didn't see it yet. I'm
okay,
gonna watch
okay,
it.
Okay.
I'm going to watch it, but I didn't have a chance. I didn't stay for the screening. I just talked to him a little bit.
He's got a chance to rap with him. Yeah,
but he's great. He just is so involved with Chicago and running around like that.
And
so.
He inspires other artists, which tells you a lot about an artist. Mm-hmm. He's been working with Kanye West a lot. He's been doing a lot of writing with a lot of different people.
And Kanye's coming here.
Kanye's moving back to the city.
Yeah.
So, you know, I like that, man. So yeah, who else is coming great. To town?
Christina Aguilera has not been here in a really, really long time. So she's coming October 16th and 17th at the Chicago Theater. And I think that's just going to be a phenomenal show.
That's another powerhouse voice. We're yes. talking about Gaga.
She's got to bring the pipes,
oh my
Christina.
Goodness. Is she still on The Voice? Or did?
No.
Okay,
She's moved on.
Long moved on. Also,
she's doing the tour. That's how she's able to tour and stuff right now. So
nice.
I think that'll just be, you know, one of those nights would be a great night to go check her out.
To check her out.
The acoustics are so good at the Chicago Theater, too.
You can't beat it. You can't yeah. beat it. The Chicago Theater, beautiful spot. I would put Christina Aguilera in top 10 mm-hmm. Vocalists, man.
Okay.
As far as skill. Like, I think she's there. I don't know. Where would you put her? Would you put
yeah,
her
in that? She's so great. I mean, I had never heard her live, so I'm going to be at the show. I have to go.
You're going? I've never seen her live either. Never heard her live. Mm-hmm. When she's live on TV, mm-hmm. I see her do a thing, and she's respected by the greats, and it's hard for it to share the stage with her. Like with the, what's that? Itchy Yaya, was the Lady Marmalade?
Yeah.
You can't
that was
just,
with Pink and all of them, yeah.
You can't just share the stage with them and not show your butt. So, I don't know. Does she have new music coming too, or is this just the
yeah, classic? She's got something out. I haven't listened to all of it, but yeah.
That, but
she's gonna tour.
How do you feel about artists who tour without having a new project out?
They usually put out something. It's, you know, sometimes it's an excuse for them to come back out. So Madonna will put out some kind of album, you know, and things like that. So, you know, they have to have something. Sometimes, you know, what's really big right now with concerts is these anniversary tours. Okay. So they'll have an album that they put out 20 years ago and then they bring it around and play the whole album.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's been a big trend and people love that.
I keep using Jay-Z as an example, but he did a B-sides concert where he didn't do any hits. He did your favorite songs that never made it to radio.
Oh, that's great.
And he only invited super fans.
Okay.
And he broadcasted the whole thing like live on Tidal or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And one of my friends got to go. And he's a radio personality, but not on a major platform. Mike B, Cool Hype Radio.
Okay.
It's coolhyperadio.com. It's his own thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I don't know how Jay-Z found out about me or his team order. He has no idea why or how he got invited.
Uh-huh.
But he got a chance to make it there.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, but those types of concerts, I would love to see. Who would you love to see in a B-sides concert if you had to choose?
Prince. Easy, Prince.
Oh, my God.
Those B-sides. He had, you know, that extra disc of just all these B-sides, you know, from the vaults. And those B-sides are as good as some of the regular songs, or better.
That's why they paid Jerry Nunn the big bucks. That was the perfect answer.
He's the best. I just went to the Park West on Friday, and the Revolution came. It was all...
Wow.
The old band, Lisa and Wendy, and I got to interview the Dr. Fink, who dresses like a doctor. He still and plays that funk, you know, that music that's just so good. And all those, it was just awesome.
Oftentimes, Prince would even refuse to do his your favorite songs. He's like, if you want to listen to it on the record. You come in here to see me do my thing.
Yeah, he kind of made the concert about himself, you know, about what he wants to hear. And a lot of artists do that, too.
Yeah, we got more in a moment, man. The voice you heard was Jerry Nunn. It's Doma T. Pongo. Hey, the Steve Cochran Show celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. And stay tuned, by the way, we've got This Week in History coming up with Dave Schwann in the newsroom in just a moment. But right now in the newsroom, and this news is not sponsored, but we're going to head into the newsroom right now. It's 4:01.
I would demand a sponsor if I were you.
It's sponsored by Curtis. It's sponsored by Curtis.
As Dave likes to say, it's sponsored by your imagination.
Sponsored by your imagination.
I like that.
Here's Roger Badish.
All right, the Chicago Marathon is starting this morning. People are going to be running for their lives all over the place. It was in November 1976 at the Metropolitan YMCA on LaSalle Street. The founders eventually started this, and it was first took place in 1977. So this is, you know, the big thing today in Chicago.
I heard a Jerry Nunn ran in the Chicago Marathon.
Yes,
before.
I was the nun on the run. Actually, I just wanted to do it once in my life. Okay, I wanted to have that on my bucket list. I ran a marathon.
What year was this?
This was 2000 and it was probably at least 6 years ago. At least maybe
that
it was
long
longer
ago.
Than that.
It
might have been 10 years ago. This has been a while. Okay, so I raised money to do it because I think that's kind of a good component to it.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to raise money for the community and raise money for AIDS and did like a little fundraiser and asked my friends and family, you know, for money, which is always hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I trained all summer and you get kind of a running group. What they do is you run along the lake and they place you in timed spots when you train for this. And I had a whole running group that I got to be really close with. So you make friends and you learn a lot about the whole experience, you know.
What did you learn about yourself though, doing something like this? Cause it seems like everyone I've spoken to who says they've done something like a marathon, a 5K, one of these types of things, they surprise themselves. They find out they can stick to something. They have more discipline than they thought they did. And there's usually a turning point. At least in my friends, there's usually something that happens, a turning point in their lives where they're like, okay, I have to do this. Like, was that the case for you? What made you want to do the Chicago Marathon? Because I have no inclination nor desire to want to do it.
Sure. I think for me, I just really wanted to do it once and accomplish it. And I was not going to stop. Nothing was going to stop me.
Mm.
So it is about finishing the race for me. And I had some troubles. My knee kind of went out, and I had to go through therapy. Oh, you know, in the middle of all this, because you're really running when you're practicing. You're really running a full marathon. You're doing different times, and they go up with the different times and different spots that you run to along the lake. And you know, it hurt my knee, and I had to go like do the stretch bands and learn how to, you know, help my leg. And so then I couldn't run the whole marathon with my team. So that was tough for me. It was very tough. And so I had to walk part of the marathon. But I was like, I am going to finish this. And I, you know, it took me 5 hours, but I did it. You know, I'm like, I am going to go across that line. Wow. But it's beautiful to do.
That's a victory story, man. Like, congratulations,
thanks,
man.
Thanks.
None on the run for real.
I got my little medal, you know, hanging in my office. So I had a great time. But, you know, there was some definite challenges with that, you know. And you hear all those crazy stories about people's nipples bleeding and their toenails falling off and all of that.
I haven't heard these stories.
You haven't heard these stories?
What about running makes your nipples bleed? What was this about?
It's the chafing of the shirts. So you have to have a special kind of shirt. You don't want to have like a cotton shirt.
You don't want to have dry nips. Okay.
You don't. Yeah, that's not a good look. Bloody nipples on the running track. Yeah, so.
Sound like a drink.
Yeah. Right. Bloody Mary, Bloody Jerry. Yeah, I didn't
know. I'll have a bloody nip.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
So, yeah, but you get to eat whatever you want pretty much around that time. I lost tons of weight. And it's good to have your friends and family support you.
How long did it take you to build up to this?
You spend a whole summer training, and they bring you up different times. It's training your body to really run far and then go back, and they pull back, and then you run really far, and then, you know, so it's a lot of back and forth to build your body up to that level, because it's not the healthiest thing in the world for your body to run a marathon, right? I mean,
it's
tough.
I'm sure. Had you been an athlete before? Are you an athletic person?
Oh, no. I was like the kid that was like picked on in gym class. I mean, I had no training. No, really? If I can do it, anybody can do it. Now, that is something I can definitely say.
That's true. Folks always say that, but I don't know. I don't know if I want to do anything for 5 hours, yo. Like,
but to say I've done it once in my life, you know? And then, all the running group, after we're done, they're like, oh, well, let's do another one. Jerry, come on, join us. I'm like, nope. That's it. I was done.
Well, it's an accomplishment. I'll say, John Williams did one, too, and he says, you know, he was joking about the obnoxious marathon people. He's like, oh, you've never done a 5K. Oh, you've never done a marathon.
Oh,
like, he said that he's like that guy. I was like, that's the only reason I would want to do it. Like,
yeah, bragging rights.
This is what I do. Yeah, right. One of those types of things. You know what I'm saying?
Brag about it and tell people.
Has it changed the way you approach like goal setting in general? Or have you always been one of those people that like, if you set it, you know you're going to do it?
I've always been. Something in my childhood, you know, when you finish what you start, you know, it's like, because I was raised in the South. I was raised in Tennessee. So, you know, finish what you start, you know, that was a big thing instilled in me. So when I went to college, I'm going to graduate college. Like, I'm not going to just go for a semester and stop, or I'm going to run the whole marathon. I'm not going to, or try to run the whole marathon, but I'm going to finish it, you know. Finish your food.
Right. What's always interesting, it's funny you talk about being from the South, like it's always interesting to me, like where you're from plays such a part in who you'll become and what you'll be good at, or, you know, it's not the deciding factor, but it matters. And the reason I say that, for the past few years, Kenyans are always like front line when it comes to these marathons or races or anything. And I'm looking at the list of past winners. It's they're expected to be some elite runners in there. Dixon Chumba, who won the race in 2015, and another Kenyan, Abel Kuru, who won back in 2016, and Galen Rupp won in 2017, and that's an American. Mm-hmm. And I remember it was a big deal when an American won the Chicago Marathon, because the Kenyans just take it over. And I wonder what it is. What's that about? Like, like, that's the joke. Like, it's like, what is it that draws people to certain things? And here's the funny thing about it. The marathon gets underway when the wheelchair participants take off at, guess what time? 7:20 a.m.
Oh, yeah. There we go.
At the Chicago Marathon, kicking off and expecting 45,000 runners to take part in this. So hats off to everybody brave enough to jump into something like this. Now, what was the route when you guys ran?
They've changed the route since then. I think it's a new route this time. I have somebody from the office I work at the Tribune. He is running, and he said that it's going up to Sheridan now, and the route's different. So I think they just try to make it easier for people where you can see a lot of the city. You get to see all the great neighborhoods. It's so supportive, and all the people cheering you on means so much. And the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches on the side, you know, here, have this, and the water and all that stuff. It's just so... It's such a great feeling. And when you're downtown and you're leaving that starting lineup, it's just so emotional. You know, it's just a great time.
So there is a list that the Chicago Tribune has put out that says 10 things to know about the Chicago Marathon.
Okay.
One of them, watch for the Americans. So they say this one would be one of the deeper American women fields with Laura Thwaite. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Sarah Crouch, Taylor Ward. Tons of women, American women, running the marathon, doing their thing to keep their eyes on. And then you have Galen Rupp, of course, from Oregon, who won last time. You got some Ethiopians running in, some folks from Great Britain, folks from all over the world coming in. And there's a celebrity, we actually talked about him on the show, who's running the marathon. Can you guess who?
No, tell me. I didn't know.
Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart's going to run.
Yes.
Okay.
And he says he runs like a gazelle, a small one. He's running the Chicago Marathon for the first time. He completed the New York City Marathon in 4 hours, 5 minutes.
Wow.
And so the goal is to do for him his best time. He has a new goal. He says he wants to do 5 marathons in total. And he's really been athletic, and he's been inspired to do these marathons, and really has been on this health kick. He's actually the only comedian that has like an athletic shoe. But he lost his mom to cancer.
Oh.
And she didn't get it checked out early on.
Okay.
And his whole thing has been health. And so, you know, hats off to Kevin Hart. He'll be in Chicago for the Chicago Marathon.
I wonder if it's hard for a celebrity to run something like that, if people are like trying to get a selfie with them or a picture or something.
Right.
I think that
kinda
might be
bothering
kind of
you.
Awkward.
And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't see him. Maybe he's like disguised a little bit. Got to look for the heart.
Right. And he's really small, like you said. So, you know, maybe just
he's got some dark glasses on.
Right. But I've seen like Instagram videos of him doing other marathons. You know, there's like an excitement. He kind of, you know, shouts and, you know, he entertains or whatever.
Oh,
he knows
good.
Who he is a little bit. Mm-hmm. But there's this thing that happens, especially when celebrities don't. When celebrities make themselves accessible, like there's a bigger spectacle that happens. You ever see when you see celebrities and they have these big 4 security guards creating a barricade around them?
Oh,
and they're like
a Kardashian.
Yeah, exactly.
The Kardashians. Yeah.
And it actually causes more attention to yourself. And they're don't look at me. Don't look at me. It's like that is asking for attention. But usually when you're accessible and people respect that you're there to do a thing.
Right.
They're also there to get their best time and do a thing. There's a different respect that kind of happens. And so I don't think he'll be, you know, at least from videos I've seen, it doesn't seem like they kind of mob him because he's there to do his thing.
Can you imagine he has a security guard running a marathon?
Right.
With him? That would be funny.
Like the Kim Jong-un motorcade on foot. I don't know if you saw this, but Kim Jong-un, when he is driving in his vehicle, he has a human wall of people jogging outside his limousine.
Wow.
That runs on foot, and limousine is driving at like 10 miles an hour, and he's got like bodyguards running alongside the car.
It's a show.
It's a show. It's a show. So if you ain't Kim, man, I don't think you need all that. Let's see, other things to look out for. It says flat equals fast. It says Chicago is one of the flattest and hence fastest marathons in the world. So many runners come here for the quality races such as Boston, and a lot of elite people like running in Chicago because of the flat landscape. Is that something you even thought about when you're running?
Yeah, that's a huge thing. Yeah, because if you run in Hawaii, you're running up and down hills and all kinds of stuff. So Chicago's a great place to run. Yeah.
The prize money. You talked about this a little earlier about the money you raised. How much money did you raise? If you don't mind me asking, I don't know if it's a
mine was $1,500. I mean, that's a lot of bread. For one little guy, you know.
Yeah, that's a lot of bread.
Yeah.
Yeah, $1,500.
And there's something about people supporting you that way. There's something about that, no matter what the amount of money is. And you're helping people. You're running for a different reason, too. It's outside of yourself. So.
What was that? When it got rough, especially with your knee injury, when it got really rough for you, what pushed you forward? Like, when you potentially wanted to stop, like, at that fourth hour?
Yeah. I think of music in my head because I don't think I had headphones going, but I was determined. I was like, not going to stop. You know, I just, I, I could not, it was not even in my wheelhouse that I would pull over to the side of the road and just stop. I would just not do that. You know, I was going to do it.
It wasn't even an option.
Crawl, whatever. I have to get carried across. I'm going to do that.
That's something spiritual. There's some wisdom in there.
Yeah, well, you know, us nuns are very spiritual people.
More of what you need to know about Chicago Marathon coming up in a minute on 720 WGN. Oh, yeah, this is like a marathon. I think we got our second win.
Yes, keep going.
Isn't this what happens when you run? Like, did you get that endorphin thing where you got, like, a certain kick out of nowhere? Like,
yeah.
How long were you running? When did that come back and happen for you? Like, when you were going out there, and we were running for so long, are there spurts of it, up, down, up, down? I don't even.
Yes.
Yes, okay.
I think the weather affects it, too, which is funny.
Really?
Yeah, because if it's like a warm day, you feel kind of like a rush. Yeah, and then it's tough if it's raining or cold or, you know, all that kind of stuff. But yeah, you have to wrap yourself. They give you these, like, you know, foil wraps that you wear, you know, when you get done because you got the chills from your body doing all that. It's pretty wild.
That's right on par with number three in this Tribune article. They say, what's the weather forecast and how will it affect people running? Mm-hmm. The forecast for today, roughly 60 degrees or so, as Roger told us a little earlier, with a 70% chance of light rain. But the humidity could be as high as 89%. And that can take a toll on runners, especially those on course for 4 to 6 hours. And it says that winds could be light, but the ideal conditions would be, you know, temperatures between 40 and 50 degrees and low humidity and cloudy and dry, because you don't want to. And you want it cool because your body is working up a heat.
Right.
And you want it less humid so you can breathe.
Uh-huh.
So tomorrow's going to be rough.
Yeah. I worked at a restaurant the next day after that marathon, and they made me a food runner. It was at ESPN Zone. Do you remember that restaurant?
Yeah.
And they made me a food runner, and I was running up and downstairs. I was like, I can barely walk.
Why would they do
that? And then I told the manager, I was like, how did you do that to me? And he's like, I thought you were kidding. You didn't really run a marathon. It's like, yes, I did. What the heck?
Yeah. You teed somebody off at work, man.
I know. Well, I don't talk to him anymore.
Well, I want to thank Jerry and Aurora. They compliment us on the show. You know, they say, you know, very nice show. Can't remember you hosting a show before, but certainly enjoyed it. And then this part, he says, would have thought after the work you did, he's talking to me here, I guess, about the Jason Van Dyke trial and the aftermath, that you would have been given the weekend off. Jerry and Aurora, thank you so much. I don't take weekends off. I was offered one, but I said, no mas. I must go on.
Yes, just like that marathon. Just keep on going.
And I'm lying. I wasn't offered any day off. Still keep working. Yeah. That's how it goes, man. Okay.
We have, so this week in history, there's some really kind of fun facts.
Oh, yeah. We got that coming up in just a moment. Yeah. That is coming up in a moment. Can we do that now, Curtis, or we're going to wait a little bit? Oh, yeah. We're gonna wait a little bit for that. But this is a segment which is one of my favorite when I listen to Dave Plyer. And it is something that must stay as a staple of the Dave Plyer show. It is as American and Chicagoan as a hot dog with no ketchup. Okay. And so this week in history, we go through some things that happened in history. And we talk to Schwani in the newsroom, Dave Schwan. And he is like a human encyclopedia. This is the cool thing about this, Jerry. We don't talk about these things with Dave before the segment.
Okay.
So we just talk about it with him once he's in, and then he just remembers stuff. Like, this week in history, this was the first time that the sandwich was invented. And he's like, oh, you know what? I had a sandwich in 1950. I'm like, how did you remember this? Uh-huh. He's like, yeah, sandwiches were the great meal of the soldiers in Vietnam. And
wow,
I'm like, yeah.
So that's so cool. Like, I wish I could do stuff. That.
Yeah, so it's just cool. If someone asked you out of nowhere, like, mm-hmm. these random facts.
Okay.
What would that expertise thing be for you? Like, something. Is there something that you know that I could just throw at you? It seems to be movies.
Oh.
But is there something that you know that I could just throw at you, a random date, time, and a situation, and you would know what it was?
Oh, no, I'm horrible at this. Like, I can't remember dates at all. Like, I don't retain the stuff like that. It doesn't stay in my brain.
Me neither.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't work like that. But I know people that are good at, like, trivia, things like that. You know,
I'm not that person. I don't know if there's any topical thing that I'm that good at that I could just, I know this front and back. Not even hip hop. Like, I only listen to what I like. I'm not even like a music historian like that. Like, Curtis, are you one of those people too? Or, like, do you have a thing that no one can touch you in this thing?
I don't think so. My dad has a hobby of railroad like history sort of stuff. So maybe like railroading for him.
Really?
Yeah.
How did that come about?
And stuff like that. We have models in our basement and stuff like that. He just liked it growing up. He lived right by a set of train tracks, and he would watch the trains go by and stuff like that. So he just kind of felt a little...
Yeah, that goes back to childhood.
Yeah.
You can tell something like that.
So he knows a lot about it, and that's something that you could toss at him. For me, it probably would be something sports-related, because I help with the Blackhawks and the White Sox broadcasts here at the station as well. So sports-related stuff, more specifically on the baseball side of stuff, I could probably kind of help out. Understand or give some sort of facts along related to it, more so modern day than like back in the 50s and stuff like that. Yeah,
Jerry and I, before the show, we had a powwow. We're talking about how we're going to do this thing, and we both said no sports. That is the thing that I am not.
And some people know everything, like they know all the numbers and all.
I admire it so much. I don't understand it.
I do it in this way. Mm-hmm. So Jerry likes to go to the movies and talk to these actors and actresses and get all the info of what it was like on set. I am just the way with sports. I like to go to the games, dissect what happened, ask the players about their experience during the games, and it's kind of the same thing, just a different setting. Okay. If you can understand.
Yeah, no, yeah, that makes sense. I get it.
I'm always fascinated when they say, this is the first time that he's run the ball in the third quarter for 2 points. Like, it gets really details. Minute and specific.
Those details sometimes go over my head too, Domati.
Oh, yeah.
They just go right over my head. And it's like I'll find them fascinating, but I won't be, I don't dig deep for those really minute stats like some other people
do. Yeah. I think people want to impress people with that. They're like, oh, I know this and da 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 da,
Tried to pretend to be a sports guy in the barbershop one time, I think this is back when Sammy was in the sports room and, he said some stat or something, so I'm in a barbershop, I'm trying to act cool, I'm like, well, blah, 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 blah. And they just start throwing out other stuff, and I was just like, I didn't know there was more to this.
That's where you get caught.
That's where you get caught. Because, it was something about a trade. Like, if this person goes to this team and they start talking about chemistry, well, if you work with, but that's different. If he's in this situation with this person, that person, I'm like, oh, you guys should be statisticians.
It's like the baseball cards, that has all the details of everything and people collect them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's maybe where it comes from.
That's the same thing. That's you.
You have a big collection?
Not a big collection. I actually stopped collecting probably about when I was maybe 12 or 13.
Oh, okay.
But I did have a pretty big collection.
Do you have, the book where you have them in, the plastic
binders,
sleeves?
Binders, yeah, with the plastic sleeves, yeah.
See, I'm a comic book collector, so I know about all this stuff. I learned to read on comics, so I do know about that kind of stuff. But
I was a Pokemon card kind of guy.
The card that was the most impressive that I liked in my collection was Ryan Sandberg's rookie card.
Okay.
And that was back from the 1980s and stuff. So that was from the earlier part of my collection was Ryan Sandberg's rookie card. And I almost thought about, because I went to Cubs convention, I almost thought about taking it and getting it signed, but I was like, you know what? That's probably worth something. I don't want to risk losing it. Okay. So I held on to it. So it's still at my
house. How much is that worth?
I have no idea. I would assume for a pretty diehard Cubs fan, it probably would be worth at least a couple $100.
Nice.
Probably a little bit more than that.
That's legit. Okay. That's legit. Before we run up to news, because you've been alluding to this comic book collection.
Mm-hmm.
What's the piece de resistance in your collection? What is that that opus that you have, or a few of them? I've always wanted. I never had access to really cool comics. When I was a kid, I would love going to my friend's house and going through them. And even some comics, they would get so in detail. I remember being a kid, I read voraciously, but there were some comics that were over my head, and I was like, oh, these are for adults.
There are some. Those are, certain kinds. I learned how to read on them. Before I could read, I wanted to learn how to read comics. My grandmother used to read me the stories, and I'd sit on her lap, and she had comics because my dad and his brothers all collected them in the in their neighborhood in Oklahoma. So they had really old ones. I mean, like 5 cents, a nickel comic. You pay 5 cents for a comic. I really liked the X-Men immediately. I don't know what it was.
X-Men. That was one of the comics books I was talking about. They had some side stories, and they had these different words. And I was like, I'm just going to look at the pictures.
Yeah.
And then, he wouldn't even barely let me touch the pages.
You know, right. I had a friend who had a real collection. I don't know if they're worth anything now, but
they can be. Yeah, it just depends on the issue and who comes out and who's in it and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, it was. It's. I mean, that's what's weird for nerds like me. Okay, that goes to these comic conventions because. It's not, it wasn't cool back then. Like, you would go, it was like being in like a dirty magazine store. You know, you were embarrassed to get like your comics. And now it's the big hip thing, you know, these major movies and all this stuff. It's just a wild time to be like, now it's cool to be a nerd.
Cool to be a nerd. I think I got a new Twitter bio.
There you go.
Well, coming up in a moment, we got This Week in History. But first, we got to get to news. Let's throw it up to Roger Badish.
Circuses on the air.
The president does it.
Sometimes you feel like
that means that it is not illegal.
Sometimes you
tear down this wall.
Here's Jennings.
Hey, Luke. May the force be with you.
It was you, Kristen, who shot J.R.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
We're not gay. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
John's been waiting a long time to take the reins.
My name is Dave Letterman. Last night, I became a father. Thank you very much.
Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
For the third time in six seasons, it's one goal achieved. The Chicago Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup. The Blackhawks win the Stanley Cup.
It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs have done it.
Now, this is history.
You're going to need outstanding hosts.
With Dave Plyer.
It's a guy, but I love you.
And Dave Schwann on 720 WGN.
Well, there's definitely Dave Schwann, but filling in for Dave Plyer is Doma T. Pungo and Jerry Nunn. And it took two of us to fill those big shoes of his, but we're here.
Yes, we're having a great time.
Absolutely. And Schwann, how you doing? Good morning.
Hello, gentlemen. Jerry, I haven't met you before. Nice to be with you.
Good to talk to you.
Yeah. Yeah. Doma T, I know you, my friend.
I know you well, my friend, too. Yo, I was bragging on you, Dave. I said, listen, Schwann.
I know. I heard. That was very nice of you.
Yeah.
I do not go back to the 1500s.
I threw a couple shots in there.
Well, I heard all your stuff, man. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm going to ask you to go back to the 1500s, though, for this one. This Week in History. Columbus via the Santa Maria.
I was not there.
There we go.
Discovers the Americas. Now, Columbus has a mixed legacy. He is remembered as a daring and path-breaking explorer who transformed the New World, yet his actions also unleashed changes that would eventually devastate the native populations he and his fellow explorers encountered. And I know some terrible stories about Christopher Columbus, but nonetheless,
you know, what's interesting about this is that they didn't tell you about this when I was in school. They went on about how wonderful a discovery it was, and he discovered the New World and everything else. Actually, there was a couple of other people that were here before he was, and evidence that Nordic tribes, Viking people, came over at least to Newfoundland or Greenland and that area before Columbus was here in 1492. But they didn't tell you about all of the stuff that, you know, he brought over and what he did, you know, to some of the native populations.
Yeah.
That only now, in the last, 25 years or so, has come to light.
I told you. You see this guy? He's an encyclopedia.
Our history books were not good whenever I was a kid. They have changed so much, I'm sure.
You too?
So
much. Was that the same thing when you were in school, Jerry?
Yeah. Yeah, it was very, like, whitewashed. I don't know. It's, to look back on it, it's, like, embarrassing. Like, how do they not fix these things? Or why didn't... It was just so... I don't know. Who wrote that stuff?
And it lets us know that we're all victims of that, like, of that miseducation, because as we have these racially charged conversations or difficult partisan conversations, people are coming from a different set of facts. If you weren't educated on who Christopher Columbus really was, you know, how can... We can't even have a conversation on certain things because you don't even... You just don't know.
It's and things were regional. I was in Tennessee. I mean, the teacher down there is going to be different than some of the other regions of you know,
that's right.
So you got a different angle.
Where you grew up?
Yeah, I grew up in Tennessee, close to Nashville. Yeah, I was in Hendersonville.
Yeah, have you guys heard this, that in the South, in some schools in the South, they're changing, they're taking slavery out of the textbooks, and they're calling it a form of immigration.
I had heard something to that effect.
To that effect, yeah. And there are a lot of lawmakers in Southern states, African-American lawmakers and some progressive lawmakers that are trying to push back on this. I don't know where it's at, because I haven't followed the story closely since it first broke, I believe, maybe around this time last year. But yeah, so... if that happens, things will get worse, because we'll be coming from a different set of facts.
Yeah, they got to be careful about stuff like that.
Absolutely. I don't think they want to be careful about stuff
like that. Just one more point to that, Doma T. There's a city in Mississippi, Vicksburg, Mississippi, that was the site of a very fierce battle during the Civil War. And the Union troops were closing in on the South, the Confederacy, and Vicksburg really took a beating. And because of that, Vicksburg, Mississippi did not celebrate the 4th of July until after World War II.
Huh.
Wow.
That's crazy.
There was some long-standing bitterness there.
Wow. Jeez. Swanee has the facts, man.
I know. So at the Tribune, we're not getting the day off on Monday for Columbus Day. We don't get it.
I've never.
Well, let's see. There's probably no mail delivery.
Right.
Courts would be closed, perhaps. Some schools.
But
I don't know.
Companies don't, you know, you don't have to work. You get a paid day.
I'm going to challenge us all to do this, though. I have a lot of Native American friends who have told me about different websites, or just Google it the day of. A lot of content comes out from Native people and Indigenous people who really want to get the history records right on who Columbus was. And so it's also a day. They've renamed it Indigenous Peoples Day. And so if you're really interested in this stuff and a history buff, you'll see a lot of videos on sites like Vox, and Vice does a lot of series, you know, and this types of stuff. AJ Plus, that news site. Okay. So make sure it's a reputable news site. But,
Can I get that day off at the Tribune, the Indigenous Day?
Indigenous Day,
I'd
right.
I'd like to have that off.
Yeah, get it off. Yeah, you probably got some Cherokee in there. I see it. You know, and so, you know, and they give a lot of information about their heritage on that day, and they kind of reclaim it. So sure. It's interesting stuff. You want to take the next one?
I'll take the next one. Yeah. I like this one. I've never heard of it, and I've bartended for way over 20 years. 1776, and a New York bar decorated with bird tail. Customer orders, like, cocktails, and that's where the origin of the word best describes, like, a mixed drink, so a cocktail, obviously, but it was decorated with a bird tail.
That's where it came
from? That was the garnish, I guess. Yeah, which is... Did you heard of this before?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But there was something interesting, Dave. Have you heard about how some of these cocktails used to be used to prevent different diseases, and how gin and tonics were used? Well, tell us about some of that stuff.
Well, there's a liqueur, or sometimes referred to as an absinthe, A-B-I-N, the spelling's not right there, but it's pronounced absinthe, a liqueur, or it's actually, and it's alcohol, figured that it would help cure various illnesses. As a matter of fact, there was some, you know, now some very illicit drugs that were used as prescription drugs 100 and some years ago, which has since been, you know, no longer in use. But a lot of alcohol that, you know, you would think not going to be good for you. You're just going to get drunk, you know. Mm-hmm. Also, when in the days, this is really horrible to think about, but before the days of anesthetic, you know, where you would be out and under for an operation, they gave you a shot of whiskey. That's all.
Yeah, and that, numbs the pain.
Like, and
yeah.
And
just a little.
And then you bit down on a piece of wood and something like that.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. A piece of wood or a piece of cloth or something to deal with it. Yeah.
Got a little whiskey on the gums.
I can't imagine that. I just, yeah.
Yeah, if you get a sore tooth, you wouldn't put whiskey on the gums, right? That was a thing.
That's back when people were tough.
Yeah.
America was
murder. Sucked it up. Yeah, who needs a doctor?
Hey, I'll take this with Chicago World Series history from the early 20th century. 1906, all Chicago World Series, first AL victory. The White Sox win 4-2 Cubs. That's in 1906. In 1908, the Cubs beat the Tigers 4-1 in the 5th World Series, first rematch. Smallest crowd at World Series. 6,210 fans see the Cubs beat the Tigers. I don't know about any of this stuff I'm reading. I'm just parroting it.
We talked about that
on
right?
the paper. Yeah, we talked about this. I don't know anything about sports when it comes to sports. In 1917, the White Sox beat the New York Giants 4-2 in the 14th World Series. And then in 29, you got the A's beating the Cubs 4-1 in the 26th World Series. We're still not to the point where Schwanny was alive yet, though.
Nope, not yet.
Not yet.
Keep going. You know these off the top of your head, right?
Right, yeah. Like in 1943. So next one, Chicago Mayor Ed Kelly opened the city's new subway system. And so the construction had taken 5 years, and though Chicago's transit lines were still privately owned, the subway had been built by the city with some help from the federal government. So the price tag was $46 million, which is the equivalent of $720 million today.
The elevated lines had been running prior to that, but that is correct. Ed Kelly dedicated the subway, blue line, red line, that sort of thing. As the Brown Line was already in place.
Really? What does L stand for? Anybody know? Don't say it, Schwan.
All right.
I want to see if Jerry or Curtis knows.
Pop quiz.
Elevated trains.
There you go.
Oh,
there you go.
Yeah. Say we knew.
Right.
Like I knew it all. I did not know.
I was going to put it just on Jerry.
I know. Put me on the spot.
I know. I like doing it. I never get a chance to do it. I'm usually the one on the spot. This is fun. You want to take the next one?
Yeah, the next one. 1947, Kukla, Fran, and Ollie premieres.
Okay? I remember Kukla, Fran, and Ollie on TV.
So I had the record as a kid.
Did you?
You're not going to believe this.
Oh,
I used to listen to it, and it had the voices, and they had the craziest little adventures, Kukla, Fran, and Ollie on the record.
Did they sound like this?
Yes, Mr. Tilson.
Yes. Miss Olson, this is our client, Mr. Kukla.
How do you do?
How do you do?
None of that, Lev, none of that. Mr. Kukla has a very fine product. I understand it's a toothpaste.
No, it's I wrote you the letter.
Oh, yes. You remember that letter, Miss Olson.
Oh, yes, hairpins.
No. Oh,
is that, it's...
Lemonade!
Is this taking you back right now, Jerry?
Oh, my God, I'm reliving my childhood.
I see he's really starry-eyed. Like
I can still see this on my old black-and-white TV at home when I was a kid.
Oh, yeah. So Kukla was the clown, right? And then Fran was the lady. She's just a regular person.
Right.
And then Ollie was the alligator, right?
Yep.
So that was the three of them, and they had a little act, and they were just so great. Those voices are just so iconic.
Just hearing it just kind of puts you in a place, doesn't
it? I'm gonna start crying.
It's crazy.
But it was a Chicago thing. This was a Chicago thing.
I didn't
really know because I was in Tennessee when I was listening to the record.
Got you.
Did you get that record from an older brother or sister, or did you find it? How did you get a hold of the record?
My parents bought it.
Your parents bought it.
Yeah, because it was appropriate for
children. They had it then. Okay.
Maybe they had it, and then we played it on the record.
Oh, I love it. And it was a record.
It was a record.
Oh, yes, yeah. Sir. All right.
Oh, yeah. I can remember it like yesterday. I actually had it till it...
Do you like the record sound better than the CD sound and the digital sound? Can you tell the difference between these three?
I'm not one of those vinyl people, but I get it, you know. And now the hipsters have brought it back, right?
Records are coming back.
I still play both.
Do you?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
What do you like about records?
What do I like about the best sound? Thing yeah. I like about records is, in addition to the sound, I've always been one to have something in my hand, okay? Mm-hmm. So pulling a record out, putting it on the turntable, cleaning it, taking care of it, it would be, I've likened it to some friends like having an antique car or something like that, something you take care of. I have records that are well over 40 years old, and they're still in good shape. And every once in a while, I pull out my little 45 RPMs, you know, if I'm thinking of a song, and play that, and I'm young again.
It's so funny that we're all like these collectors, like collect comic books, records, baseball cards.
You guys will know what I'm talking about in some years up the road now.
Well, I hope I will, because I can't touch anything that I like anymore. Like, you've got ebooks, you got the, yeah. Right.
That's the point, Domati, yes.
Yeah, I feel your pain, because, I love Tidal, I love Apple Music, but the problem is, I used to open the CD case, I used to mess with the rapper for like 30 minutes because it was mm-hmm. hard as ever to get off. And then you flip through the CD book before you even put it in. And
right.
there isn't even a PDF now of the pictures mm-hmm. or the mood or the lyrics or anything.
Some labels
that stuff.
Still send me CDs.
Really?
Sony always sends me like the current stuff. So
I want to be cool.
Like Leon Bridges, I got his album. And then you can, if you meet Leon Bridges, you can sign it.
Yep.
You know, so I love all that.
That's right. And not only that, if you bought an album, an LP, what we call LPs, and which stood for long playing record, by the way, LP did, 12-inch disc. There were times if it was a big group like Santana or the Beatles, for that matter, the Stones, perhaps, other groups, sometimes you got a poster, a big poster that was folded up inside there. So you not only got a record, you not only got a great piece of artwork on your cover, you got a poster of the group that you could hang in your room.
That's what
I'm talking
about.
Getting that more for your money?
Yeah. Yeah. Now when I meet celebrities, they got to sign my phone. Like, what am I
doing? Oh, no. That's always awkward.
No, that was that.
Or your body. Yeah,
just
or
get a
body.
Picture with them or something. Like
yeah,
that.
Sign yeah. my bloody name. Well, we're not going to go back to that.
Yeah.
Let me see. You want to take this one or is it on me?
I liked I Love Lucy, so...
Oh, go for that. It. Go for it.
1951, I Love Lucy debuted on CBS TV. This was the first scripted television program shot on 35mm film in front of a live studio audience. It won 5 Emmy Awards and received numerous nominations. This is really interesting. I didn't know a lot of this. It's the most watched show in the United States in 4 of its 6 seasons. It was the first to end its run at the top of the Nielsen ratings. It's still syndicated, obviously, and remains popular, you know, with an audience of 40 million each year. So, wow.
This one is sentimental to me because I didn't have cable growing up, and I watched a lot of reruns of I Love Lucy, and I loved I Love Lucy. But then now, in hindsight, it's just interesting to watch the show in hindsight, given like the context of what women were expected to do. Like every time she tried to work or go to the job, I remember that episode. You guys remember that iconic episode where her and her friend were making the chocolate balls?
Yes.
Oh, sure.
On the conveyor belt.
On the conveyor belt. Yes. And she just would mess up every time.
Classic.
And then it created this archetype of like the spouse who couldn't get it right. But then it switched in TV later on, and now you've got like the dumb husband. Who, you know, the Homer Simpson,
right?
The Al Bundy, like it's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I felt like she wore the pants in that group,
but she did wear
like
the pants.
That?
Yeah, she was the comic. She was the show. She was yeah. Lucille Ball was the show.
Right,
this is a great show, iconic show.
It was.
Were you born yet, Shwani?
Yes, I was actually.
Woo-hoo, we made it.
I was a baby when the show first came on. I have to say, I was a baby. I remember I Love Lucy actually in reruns, in syndication.
Sure.
There were a couple of follow-up shows. There was a Lucy Desi Comedy Hour that was on just kind of in the last season, where Lucy and Desi in real life were getting a divorce, so that was about to end. Uh-huh. Then Lucy had a couple of other shows where she was by herself, and then Vivian Vance, who played Ethel on the original, was a neighbor of hers for, I think the show was just called The Lucy Show, and then she had something else after that called Here's Lucy,
mm-hmm.
which were, you know, all and really kind of based on the antics of the old I Love Lucy program.
Yeah, wow. I interviewed the daughter one time, Lucy Arnaz.
Lucy Arnaz?
Really? I did.
She seems like a very nice person.
She was. She was
yeah.
great. She was going around traveling and doing a show, so she wanted to promote it, but she was really nice.
Great.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can squeeze one more in. 1964, Martin Luther King Jr. wins the Nobel Peace Prize. He's an African-American civil rights leader, of course, awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his nonviolent resistance to racial prejudice in America. And at 35 years of age, he was the youngest person to ever receive the award.
I accept the Nobel Prize for Peace at a moment when 22 million Negroes of the United States are engaged in a creative battle to end the long night of racial injustice. I'm mindful that only yesterday in Birmingham, Alabama, our children crying out for brotherhood were answered with fire hoses, snarling dogs, and even death.
Oh, wow. The way he speaks. It's so powerful.
How do you guys process that, given what we've been reporting in the newsroom over the last few days?
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. I remember we were talking the other day about the protesters and the protests, and we had a panel, a round table with Justin Kaufman, and we had an interesting conversation about, you know, what people thought about the marching and et cetera, et cetera. And it's funny because when you're in it, it feels different. But when you step back from it, it's not much different than what we saw back in 1964 in terms of, you know, what people are trying to do and the message they're trying to get across. We've got to go to break. Are we there right now? We've got to go to break. We'll be right back in a moment.